Yes?
Excuse me, the conference is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Sir, you may begin.
Okay, thank you. So we have Philip Shepherd, we have Marilyn Cade, and do we have Grant Forsyth?
Present at the moment, yes.
Thank you, Grant. Ken Stubbs?
Absent, with proxy to Kerry Karp.
Okay, so we have Kerry Karp.
Yes, I am.
Great, thank you, Kerry. June Theo?
Yes.
Is that June Theo?
June was on the line and he's not muted, so he might just have walked away from the telephone.
Okay. Tony Harris?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Tony. Tony Holmes? Do we have Tony Holmes?
He has sent a proxy if necessary to...
I'm here, Bruce. Thanks.
Thank you, Tony. Greg Ruth?
Yeah.
Hello, Bruce. I don't know whether you received that. I am on the line.
Yes, thank you, Tony Holmes. I've got you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Greg Ruth?
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg. Robin Gross?
Good morning.
Good morning, Robin.
Good evening.
Norbert Klein?
Norbert sent his apologies, and he's given his proxy to Robin and then to Milwaukee.
Okay. Milwaukee?
Yes, hello.
Thank you, Milwaukee. Ross Rader?
I'm here. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello.
And good morning.
Tom Keller?
Tom Keller's absent, and he's given his proxy to Ross and then to you, Bruce.
Okay. I'm here. Uta Decker?
This is June. I'm sorry, I just got back. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, June. Uta Decker?
Uta is apparently absent, and she sent her proxy. She's given her proxy to Kiyoshi and then to Lucy.
Okay. Kiyoshi?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Kiyoshi. Lucy Nichols?
I'm here.
Thank you. Maureen Cubberly?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Maureen. Avery Doria?
Yeah.
Sophia Beckerley?
Hello.
Hello, Sophia. Brett Fawcett?
I'm here.
Thank you, Brett. Suzanne Finn?
She's absent and sent her apologies.
Okay, and who else do we have? We have Michael Pallage. Do we have Kurt Pritz?
Yeah.
Is John Jeffrey there as well?
Yeah.
Okay, John. Do we have Liz Williams?
Yep, I'm here.
Olaf Norton?
Yes.
Maria Farrell?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Maria. And Glenn?
Yes.
Okay, I think that's everybody. The agenda today then is to approve the minutes of the 17th of January and also to look at the next stage in the commencement of the PDP that was initiated in the meeting on the 6th of February, which is deciding whether to appoint a task force or address the issue some other way. And the third item on the agenda is to agree on the terms of reference for the new PDP. And under item 4, Marilyn Cade requested a discussion on whether we should have used part of the Washington meeting for a discussion of the new PDP. Are there any other changes to the agenda? Okay. The minutes of the 17th, Glenn, how long have they been available?
They've been available actually from the last meeting, that they were revised twice. The reason why people did not vote was added. There were 8 people who did not vote, and that was added. And then there was a paragraph that Marilyn suggested needed clarification, which I sent out and that went out today. That's a very small modification.
You want to just run through what that modification was?
Yes, just let me pull that up for you. That's not it. Sorry, I'm having... The modification was, Bruce Tonkin clarified the difference between a process and the outcomes of that process. In the existing .com agreement, a date of November 2006 was included. There was a specified process by which certain dates, renewal proposals were required to be created, and that the community was not advised about changing this process. The concern arose because the .com draft agreement was posted 4 weeks before the window opened on the .com renewal process, and responses were required in less time than the original process would have permitted. It is the first part of that sentence, or that paragraph, that was changed.
Okay, well, I think how that should probably read is to say that, as I recall, I mentioned the fact that there was a process to be followed, and that was in the existing agreement, so I don't think I specified it in detail, so maybe that should just be in brackets as what the process is, as distinct from actually having said that.
Okay, I'll do that.
But maybe what you could probably do, Glenn, is put a link to the relevant part of the agreement.
Yes,
just simply say that there was a process, and then just put a link to the COM agreement and with the right clause, because I think that defines the renewal process.
I'll do that.
Bruce, Philip here, if I may?
Yeah, go ahead, Philip.
In the absence of Ken Starbuck, I'd like to propose that the minutes are accepted as so amended.
Okay. Just before we do that, any other changes or requests on the minutes? Okay. In that case, I'll call for the question then. All those in favour of accepting the minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any against? Any abstentions?
This is Lucy. I abstain.
Thank you, Lucy. Who was that, sorry?
This is June, I abstain as well.
Okay, thank you, June. Okay, any other abstentions? Okay, we'll note those minutes has passed. Okay, item two. Under the ICANN bylaws, once a PDP has been initiated, then the next step is to decide whether to form a task force to study the issue. And if we do decide to form a task force, what the membership of that task force should be. The default is basically one member per constituency, but the council has the option to add members to that task force as well. So at this point, I guess I'll just open... and I might try and do this in meetings more generally, but... Does anyone want to declare any statement of interest that's related to this particular policy development process that hasn't already been stated?
This is June, I do. As an employee of GTLD Registry and a representative of the GTLD Registry constituency, I have an interest in policies that affect GTLD Registry.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Bruce Philip, at this point of clarification, to help us in terms of our processes for the future and to avoid duplication, perhaps you could re-emphasize what you just said earlier, which is a declaration of any statement of interest that has not already been declared. And I think that's a very important...
Actually, Philip, it's Marilyn. I'd like to... Bruce, can I speak on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I actually think it's probably a good practice to allow people to declare interest at the time, since things do change. And I think this is fairly quick.
Yeah, I think the other intent, too, is that it's a conflict of interest or statement of interest that might be relevant to this particular question. So you might have a general statement of interest, which is, you know, I'm Bruce Tonkin and I work for Melbourne IT, and I'm a registrar. So, you know, similar to what Gene said, obviously a registrar is interested in the policy outcomes. But if the particular policy happened to be about Melbourne IT, then I'd probably want to state, just our company, then I would be a bit more specific about the conflict at this point.
I will completely support the idea of specificity. What I'm trying to avoid is the idea of unnecessary duplication on these calls.
Yes, that's fair enough, Philip. Okay, anyone else want to make any statements in this area? Okay. Then I'll open the floor then for discussion of the issue. If anyone wants to propose an approach here, whether people believe there should be a task force or not.
Bruce, I posted on that, so it's Marilyn. I'm happy to speak to the perspective I have. And let me just do that without making a comment on whether it's the council working as a group of the whole or a task force. This PDT, it's very windy here, so pardon us if it gets pretty noisy. This PDT is interlinked to policy topics we will be discussing and considering in what we're referring to as PDT 05. And I'm very interested in making sure that we have a strong amount of sharing of information so that we are able to move quickly and efficiently and effectively in examining information and options. And so my suggestion would be that we work either as a council of the whole with the ability to add members from constituencies, or we form a task force and make sure that we have at least one member of each constituency's elected councillors, as well as any other appointees from the constituency. But I'm interested in making sure we've got a strong amount of overlap because of the interrelatedness of the topics and the issues and background we'll be considering.
Carrie to speak, please, Ruth.
Yep, I might just take a cue. So, Carrie, anyone else?
You can stick me in there as well, please, Bruce. Thank you.
Okay, Ross, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Kerry.
Within the registry constituency, which is certainly one of the constituencies that's most profoundly affected by all of this, there's significant heterogeneity of perspective on almost every issue that we'd be discussing. So I'm strongly in favor, we're strongly in favor of the notion of some form, however it's labeled, where councillors may be represented and other members of the constituency who are capable of expressing viewpoints that need to be expressed, in perfect keeping with what Marilyn is suggesting.
Okay, so just let me just clarify what you're stating there. So, Carrie,
we do not want this body to be restricted solely to elected councillors.
Okay. And would you, when you're saying bringing people in and out,
constituency reps. I'm assuming that we're talking about the way we normally set up a task force.
Yes,
and I'm speaking
towards
favor.
Okay. Ross Rader?
Yeah. The only thing that I don't even know if it's a concern, but to clarify, maybe request a clarification from Marilyn. I wouldn't want to require a constituency to have to appoint a counselor. I think that if we're going down that route, Marilyn, we should at least make it clear that a constituency may wish to. We may want to recommend that they should, but to require them, it just seems rather, I wouldn't want to micromanage the constituencies in that way. So with that small modification, I'd certainly back that proposal.
Okay, the other variable on this, so what I'm hearing is people want the ability to appoint other than council members to take advantage of broader experiences in the constituency. the other thing I want to understand is, you know, we want to have more than one representative. So the standard task force approach is one representative, although I know in the Who Is task force, it's pretty much operating, I think, with about three representatives per constituency.
Yeah, actually, Bruce, I'm going to, it's Marilyn. Historically, I would just say that actually many of the task forces have allowed for more than one representative. That has not been a problem in the management of the Who Is task forces. My personal view would be that constituencies should be able to have up to three members, whoever they are.
Okay, and then you've used the term up to, and then the other issue is how you might handle voting within a task force on an issue.
Yeah, but we've done that before as well. We have equalized the voting, so in the previous Who Is task force that Tony Harris and I co-chaired, we had one constituency that had two members and others that had three. Everybody got three votes. And so it didn't unbalance the voting, you know. So if you had two representatives or one, you had three votes. You could also think about doing it as each constituency. We do very little voting in task forces.
Bruce, it's Grant here. My apologies, but I have to leave the call now, and I've passed my proxy to Marilyn and then to Philip. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Grant.
When the council works as a task force of the whole, then, of course, the nominating committee members are represented in that setting. But they're also, on task forces, I think there are two representatives from the ALAC on the Who Is task force. Glenn can correct me on that. The ALAC is advisory, but they, too, have provided multiple representatives.
That's right.
For clarification, this is Aubrey. So in the task forces, if I understand it, the non-com appointees are not represented unless specifically invited to participate.
That is correct, yes. Yeah, unless the council invites them, in other words, yeah.
Yeah, and Bruce, that's why I originally proposed we work as a council of the whole, with the ability of constituencies to substitute for a councillor, another representative, because that provides the flexibility a constituency might choose, but it also ensures the nominating committee representatives are participating.
Were you saying that ordinarily with a task force a non-com would not be representative?
No, I didn't say they could not be. I just said the default is that they are not.
They are not?
No,
Philip,
that's right.
You're saying that's the case?
Yes, Philip, that's right. And there's a lot of history about this, but I'd prefer we not debate that here if we can solve this and move on to the substance of the PDP by convening this as a task force of the whole of the council and giving constituencies flexibility, that ought to solve the problem.
Or conversely, just inviting them on.
Yeah, that's another way of doing it, yeah. In fact, the way you mentioned that, maybe the easiest way is we call this a, I just want to kind of, where I can, use the terminology in the bylaws, because if you do that, then it triggers different sections of the bylaws. So if we call it a task force, that triggers the sort of Section 7, which, you know, just defines how task force works and how the reports are produced and so on, and I think that's probably useful. So what we could do is, if I'm getting the wording right, is that we can form a task force which would comprise of, by default, the members of the council, which would include the nominating committee members, and it would also include the liaisons may attend the meetings as well.
Right.
But that council members, or also the constituencies, have the option of appointing representatives in place of council members.
Mm.
I think that's right. Does that sound right?
Hi, Bruce, I have a constitutional dilemma on my hands that I'd like to just pass along. My recollection of the bylaws of my constituency don't actually allow us to participate on a task force without being elected in any way. I don't believe we can as a council, appoint a counselor to a task force and actually have somebody from the registrar constituency just show up?
Ross,
I'm talking about my constituency bylaws, sorry, not the ICANN bylaws.
Right, but can I ask a question, Ross?
Yep.
If you're appointed by the council, that is, if the task force is, the council appoints a task force composed of counselors,
mm-hmm.
and then provides the option to constituencies to substitute, that would then give your bylaw opportunity to hold an election if your constituency so chose.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think, Ross, it's possible then for the constituency to decide, okay, we wish to elect our council members, which could mean just to, that you and I and Tom would be subject to that election. That's probably the easiest way of running that.
Okay.
Bruce, this is June. Can you put me in the queue?
Yeah, go ahead, June.
Yeah. Our constituency believes that we need to facilitate interface with the council. At least one and possible two counselors should be members of each task force and working group. So our notion is that we need to have one or two counselors in each task force to facilitate interactions with the council.
Yes, so I think what Ross was suggesting, which we can add this to the motion, well, maybe we'll do it as a separate motion, but I think we can simply say that the council recommends that. And then, as Ross says, it's left to the constituencies to make that decision.
I think that would be much cleaner, yeah. Another point along those lines, if I may, Bruce.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have no plan, personal plan, on really participating in this task force. However, I'd like to kind of keep tabs on what this task force is up to. I think a lot of its work will be both interesting and important. So as a counselor, I need to stay informed about it. Would it be possible or to structure this task force such that counselors can have full participation, or is that a right that's already afforded to us? Not full participation, but full observer rights, i.e. we're added to the mailing list, we get notices of the conference calls, but we don't necessarily have a vote or a voice?
I think that's reasonable. I mean, I think that's something that we can certainly do. And as you say, it may be something that we can do anyway. I mean, for example, we have Michael Pelage that's often attending these calls from the board as an observer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's afforded the rights of, I believe he can be included on the mailing lists and listening on the calls. So I think that's in order. I think the only thing I would say from a logistics point of view is that you just advise Glenn so that she understands,
okay,
you know, the number of phone lines and things like that required.
All right, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Jane.
I think that we have one or two counselors, but I think majority of the force goes to the three individual parties.
Sorry, I can't hear.
Yeah, I can't hear, Jane. If you're able to speak close to the phone, yeah.
Yeah, let me try again.
Yep.
Except in very special circumstances, I think experts who are not counselors should make up the majority of the task forces and working groups established by the council, freeing counselors to focus most of their attention in managing the consensus policy development process instead of directly developing policy. So I propose that at least one or two counselors to be a member of task forces, but the majority of the task forces should consist of experts instead of counselors.
Yes, okay. I think that's a fair point as well. Okay, let's try and sort of bring this then to a motion, which might actually be in a number of parts, but I think the motion is that the council wishes to appoint a task force that consists of the full council, including the nominating committee members and the to the liaison, the ALAC liaison, the GAC liaison, that constituencies have the option to appoint representatives in place of their council members, that the council recommends that constituencies ensure that there is at least one council member from their constituency on the task force, and that council members that are not members of the task force are able to continue with observer status, and that they are able to receive the mail from the mailing list and their access onto calls. Has that captured everything? Okay, would someone like to second that motion?
I'll second that, Bruce.
Okay. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Any against? And any abstentions? Okay, we'll note that motion is passed. Okay, the next item of the agenda is in terms of reference of the PDP. I don't know whether Olive can update me because I haven't read emails in the last 12 hours, but I produced a draft about a week ago. Has there been any changes to that or updates to that draft?
If you ask me, well, since you asked me to update, the only thing I've seen is quite recently, about an hour ago, that Marilyn posted suggested amendments.
I thought I saw something from Grant or Philip that was short too.
That's right. It was about 6 hours ago, maybe even more. A very short. I posted on behalf of Mr. Grant Forsyth, and that was an amendment to Section 5, Use of Traffic Data. 1121
buses. Right, okay. And, yeah, I think when I looked at that, I thought that if this is a PDP about contractual conditions generally, I think it would be strange to be picking a particular topic in that context.
And I'm sorry, what was the change that was proposed, Philip?
I think it was just amending what we already had, wasn't it? It was a... Just making the point that the existing reference there on traffic data was something that was a more generalised point and links to other things such as the registry services.
Yeah, the terms of reference so far were derived from the. Staff issues report, and one of the issues was issue number 5 called uses of traffic data, which is examine the differences in traffic data available to thin and thick registries and which privacy rights exist in such traffic data. Examine how the use of traffic data can enhance services to the registry. Determine whether any allowances should be made for non-discriminatory access to that data, and determine whether the uses of traffic data available to registries as a consequence of registry operation should be restricted. So that was kind of that general topic area. And Philip, what have you proposed instead? You've said...
I think the only change there was the traffic data as a for example of general policy areas. I think it was those extra two words.
The issue here right now, the heading is... uses of traffic data, and it sounds like the topic is actually uses of resources or information which is available due to the the monopoly status of each registry provider. That is, it's because you're in that unique situation, you would have potential to have control of or access to information that competitors in downstream or upstream might be dependent on in order to conduct their business or generate a competitive service.
Marilyn, this is Maureen Bruce. May I speak or is there a cue?
It's probably best if we perhaps form a queue. Yeah, so I have Maureen. Anyone else wanting to speak?
June. Could have a conversation once you're ready.
This is June. Could you put me on the queue? Yeah.
Yes, you're on the queue, June. And Philip, anyone else? Go ahead, Maureen.
Actually, Bruce, can I just ask a procedural question?
You had
amendments from me, and you had one amendment from Grant.
I don't think I have your amendment at the moment, so...
I posted them to the council list, and Glenn acknowledged they were received.
Okay, so what I'd suggest we do, let's just talk about this one amendment first,
sure.
And then we'll talk about the one you've suggested.
I'm happy to do that. I just wanted to know what the order was.
Yep, okay. So, Maureen, go ahead.
Okay, I just want to refer to both of them. I think that Philip's comment for example, probably makes good sense. I'm looking at yours, Marilyn, and I have it right in front of me, and you were just referring to it, and I think it would be useful if people on the call could see what you've actually written as a proposed revision under 5A, because I think that this makes it very specific about the use of traffic data with regard to competition. You have it there. That would probably make more sense for you to read it than for me. But the actual wording that you've inserted in 5A, in my view, changes it substantially from the rather general reference to traffic data and examining the differences in traffic data available to thin and thick registries and the privacy concerns. So I wondered if it would be possible for you to just, since not everyone seems to have it, read that 5A out as you have recommended changing it.
I'm happy to do that, but could I pause and ask counselors to identify to Glenn if they don't have this, then she could, in the meantime, post
the
document.
It has been posted, Marilyn. I've got it. It's just that I hadn't read it at 6 in the morning. But so.
Yeah, that's a little early there.
No,
I just think it is substantial, and I think we should pay attention to it.
Would you like
Bruce, if I may, Philip, I think the two amendments are completely compatible. And perhaps if we just understand the change of title and the substitution that Grant suggested, I think that can apply to the existing terms of reference, and then we can discuss that if that's approved as the amended terms of reference in relation to Maryland, then you'll find there is no incompatibility in that discussion.
Let me just try again, if I might. That I think the heading needs to be changed to something like...
That's just what I was saying, I think.
Right. Uses of resources, maybe it's use and access to resources, and I'm making this up, so maybe I can count on the staff to capture it. Use and access to resources which are unique to the registry role, comma, e.g. traffic data and other elements.
Can you put Carrie in the queue too, please, Ruth?
Yes, Carrie. Just trying to put my head around that. Perhaps
and just in a word of explanation, the unique role that a registry provides, just like the unique role that a local telco provides, means that the uniqueness of that role is the entity has access to information that only they have because of the uniqueness of their role. I'm not making a judgmental statement about this. I'm making a factual statement about it. Because you're in that unique role, you have access to certain kinds of information. Very often that information is required by competitors upstream and downstream to build products. Go back to an example of the local telephone company, regardless of the country. That entity has access to the registration, like the address, et cetera, and they publish white pages. But in almost every country, they're required to make access to that data file available in non-discriminatory terms and conditions on a cost-based basis so that competitive products and directories can be built. But
the wording
is unique.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think my way through the wording here a little bit. If you look at 5D, it says determine whether the uses of traffic data which is available to registries as a consequence of registry operations should be restricted. If you use that as a basis, then the heading probably should be, if we remove the word traffic, and you just say uses of data which is available to registries as a consequence of registry operation. It's probably the right heading.
And Bruce Maureen again, if I may.
And Bruce, it's Marilyn. I'd like to be back in the queue on the word data and whether that's broad enough.
Okay, well, the other thing I'll do is I should start going back to the queue. So I had Maureen, then I had June. I think, so Maureen, you're kind of coming in on the queue again. And Maureen, sorry, and Marilyn's in again. So that's what just...
Well, what about Carrie? Did you get him?
Yes, I have got Carrie. So I've got June, Philip, Carrie, Marilyn, then Maureen again. So if we go back to June.
Okay. First of all, our constituency have not had enough time to bat the issues of the TOR within our constituency, so we certainly need more time to have thorough discussions in our constituency with majority participation from our members. That's the first statement I'd like to make. The second one is I have a couple of comments on Marilyn's edit. The first one is the third paragraph, starting with it is the purpose of consensus policy.
Point of order.
To guide the development of contractual agreements.
Yeah, just hold on a second. What's that, Philip?
Yeah, start the paragraph.
Sorry to interrupt, and I apologize. The conversation has been a bit confusing so far.
Okay.
But I think we are just discussing the proposed amendment that I posted on behalf of Grant, and we are in a moment going to get to the series of amendments that have been posted by Marilyn.
Yeah,
right.
I think what we'll do, just talk about number five for a starter, which is terms of reference number five, which we seem to have jumped to. So maybe what we should have done is started at the top. But we are currently on number five. And then what I might do after we've had this discussion on number five is just perhaps go back to start at the top and see if there's any changes people think should be made to the introduction and then the first terms of reference and so on. I think.
Chairman, if I have these two amendments. To Section 5 simultaneously, is that correct?
I'm trying to sort of look at Section 5 as a whole now and say, because I think we're getting a few different perspectives. So June, if we can just focus on number 5 for the moment, which is heading...
My apologies, you have to interrupt again.
Okay.
Go ahead, June.
So we are discussing only about the use of traffic data at this moment?
That's right, yes.
Okay, I'll think about that. I have no comment to make here.
On this section, okay. Philip again.
Thank you. The proposal, I think, that I was posting on behalf of Grant would read as follows. The title of Section 5 would change from uses of traffic data to uses of downstream services, for example, traffic data, and the rest of Section 5, wherever you see the word traffic data, would have instead the phrase, for example, traffic data.
So that just the heading again, use of downstream
services such as traffic data.
Okay, and then you're going to say, then you're going to leave it the same and you're just going to use such as everywhere, are you?
Exactly.
Okay.
And that was just the amendment posted by Grant, which I think is simply an attempt to say what is under Section 5 is important, but there are some wider issues beyond traffic data, and let's just be aware of those and make reference to those, but not lose the point about traffic data being an important point raised.
Okay. Then I had Carrie Cobb.
Yeah, I'm going to finesse this a little bit. I'd like to comment on the purpose of our discussing five or any others of these. Are we now revising the terms of reference so that the adjusted list can be put to the constituencies for due consideration before we proceed to decide to vote on what happens next? Or are we amending something that has been available for all of a week in the best of the cases, only an hour in the least timely of cases? in a situation where the consequences of this are really profound for a lot of us. So what are we actually heading towards right now? Revising the terms of reference so that the constituencies can consider them, or are we going to be preempting that second step?
My understanding of what we were doing, Carrie, was that we were, in this particular meeting, the council was working to agree on a set of terms of reference, and then it wouldn't go out for another round of comments on the terms of reference.
Bruce, this is June again. Could you put me on the queue?
And Ross as well, please.
I have Carrie, I have June, I have Ross. I assume we probably should address that point that Carrie's making.
Yeah, and I'm still in the queue too, and that's the point I want to address as well, the one that Carrie brought up this morning.
Okay, so I'll go, in that case, Maureen, you go next, and then June, then Ross, on this particular point.
Right. I think that some of the amendments that have been made or proposed amendments that Marilyn has put forward to the terms of reference are substantial and get into some of the issues that will emerge out of these terms of reference. I do believe that we should leave the terms of reference as they were written because I too am concerned that if we change the terms of reference at this point without seeking approval for the terms of reference, then we're not following our own process with our constituencies, even though I don't have a constituency, being a non-com rep, one of them. I think that there is a problem in expanding the terms of reference to a level of specificity that might, by default, leave out other things. I would far rather see the terms of reference as broad as they are than let the issues emerge out of them, as Marilyn has already started to do, as we deal with the terms of reference. So other than that, one clarification, which Philip spoke to on behalf of Grant, which I think makes sense because it's a clarification of what we mean by number five, I would like to see the terms of reference stay as they are.
Bruce, I need to be in the queue to speak on this topic. It's Marilyn.
I'm afraid you're going to have to put me back in the queue too, Carrie.
Okay, the queue's coming a bit hard to manage. I've got June, Ross, Marilyn, then Carrie. So go ahead, June.
Okay, my comment is about the terms of reference in general. I'm not sure why we are in such a rush to decide terms of reference at this moment, because our constituency has not had enough time to bet on the issues, and we certainly need more time. And I think terms of reference is supposed to focus on not only COM, but also all DTLDs. So I think I don't see any reason to rush this out at this moment.
Okay, so let me just sort of identify the relevant bylaw section just so that we know what so the rules are, this is section 7B, the council, with the assistance of the staff manager, shall develop a charter or terms of reference for the task force within 10 days of the initiation of the PDP. And so the PDP was on the 6th of February, and we're now at the 16th. So we are operating within the timelines of those bylaws. I accept the comment, obviously, that some constituencies felt that needed more time. But I just want to clarify that we are following the process in the bylaws. So go ahead, Ross.
I'm having a bit of a hard time following or tracking and understanding the implications of the amendments that have been made. I confess that I didn't fully read or consider those amendments that were tabled today, and I'm still not able to find the amendment that the Grant amendment that was referenced. I suspect that there's merit in some of these amendments. I don't profess to understand what the differentiation being made between services and data is. I feel very strongly about having a policy discussion about data, not about services. I think we've already had a conversation about services. So I'm hesitant to fully support these amendments without considering them more fully. So I'm not sure if that puts me in the same camp as June or not. But I think that really to proceed on this question that's being asked of us right now, we may be doing ourselves a disservice. So I have no concrete recommendation, but I do have a bunch of observations. And with that, I'll give you back.
Okay, Marilyn?
Yeah, so I was going to say a couple of things that are fact-based. One is, as I've been said by Bruce as the chair, the terms of reference are developed by the staff manager with the council's agreement. It's our job. We're all elected. We're appointed, but that's the equivalent of election. It's our job to make these decisions and develop terms of reference that achieve an outcome. We just lived through an unfortunate misunderstanding because we didn't pay enough attention to the language when we asked for the issues report. We all thought we knew what we wanted. There was either a misinterpretation or a misunderstanding, and we are dealing with it. We have to pay attention to this. The terms of reference guide the work. This is our job. And it may be tough, but that's our job. And I am sorry to hear counselors who are either appointed or elected to think that it's not their job. The bylaws clearly say within 10 days the staff and the counselor will develop the terms of reference. It doesn't say that the staff and the council will determine terms of reference, and then the council will continually consult. We're elected and appointed for a reason. And getting it right is important, as we saw with the issues report. So I'd like us to focus on this in good humor and with respect for each other and work through what the purpose of these changes are and then take a vote on it. Ideally, in the future, we will have the legal staff advising us. I'm sorry that the amendments are late, but I don't notice that the ICANN board can't deal with amendments to a resolution because they're late.
This is Sean speaking. Can I be in the queue?
I'd like to be in the queue too. This is Avery.
Okay, I have John Jeffrey, Avery, and Carrie was also in after Marilyn, so I'll go Carrie, John, and Avery. Go ahead, Carrie.
Okay, I'm quoting from the message that you sent to us on the 8th of February, Bruce, where you say, given that the General Counsel did not rule on the individual issues in the issues report, I have also asked the General Counsel to review the terms of reference as they develop to advise the Council on whether the issues under consideration are within the scope of the ICANN policy process and within the scope of the JNSO. And I, as an elected, responsible, prepared-to-act counselor, had been running under the assumption that we would receive benefit of counsel's opinion on this so that we could consider it duly as we proceed with our own action. Have we received any such communication? Question A, it's almost rhetorical, given that we're now talking about amending these the terms. And once this amendment has been fully discussed, and I think it's a very, very reasonable discussion to have, do we then get benefit of counsel's comment on the appropriateness of what we're doing before we proceed to action?
Okay, so, Carol, let me respond to that. I had intended before we did vote on anything here that we would ask the General Counsel to clarify whether he believed the issues were in scope or not. So that was certainly my intent. My understanding, John will speak next, but my understanding was the reason why the General Counsel is on this call is to be able to provide advice on in that area.
Bruce, if you could stick me back in the queue as well, please. Oh, sorry, I thought you were finished. I'm sorry.
Yes, so I've got John, then Avery, then Ross. So go ahead, John Jeffrey.
That is essentially why I'm on the call, because Bruce asked me to come and speak to that point. The point that I'd also like to raise is that I have not had an opportunity to review the amendments that have been posted in the last couple of hours, except for skimming through them while we've been on this discussion. So I am a little troubled that it seems like the same thing that's happened in the previous two meetings is happening again, and that's that there's some issues that are developed on the fly that don't seem to have a broad communication across the council. And I certainly understand what Marilyn's trying to do with these amendments, because I think there are some good focused issues that she's approaching. But I think it may be unreasonable to ask the council to respond to it on the fly, and I think it's there's probably some serious issues that need to be discussed, not loosely, but in some detail among the council before this is voted on.
Okay, so can I ask a question, Bruce?
Yeah, go ahead, ma'am.
So I still would suggest that we walk through the proposed changes, identify any questions about them, figure out where there is broad agreement, where there are questions, and get as close as we can to a final TOR that's clear. And if we can vote on it today by my withdrawing some of the amendments, that could be good. If my withdrawing the amendments doesn't actually improve the clarity, I recall my experience with the issues report language, then we need to call an emergency council meeting in order to vote on it.
Can you put Charlie back in the queue, please, Bruce?
Yep, we'll have Avery and Ross and Carrie. So, Marilyn, was that a question for John or Marilyn, or is that just a statement?
It was more a question for you as a process issue.
Okay, well, I'll run through the queue, and then I'll come back to that. Avery, you're next, and
yeah,
then Ross and
Carrie. My question was sort of simple. I guess a process question is my normal experience with things like you have a process and then somebody's submitted amendments to it. If you do go through them one by one, you talk them out, you vote on them one by one, and then you have something that is amended that you vote on. And we spent the last half hour talking about whether we could talk about it. And I guess I don't quite understand why we just don't march through the amendments and talk about them one by one. Obviously, the 10-day requirement that is in the PDP does seem to mean that we are supposed to sit, talk, and decide. So I guess I don't understand why we're not walking through things one by one, knocking them down if they deserve to be knocked down, but doing that.
Okay.
Bruce, this is John. Can I be in the queue again?
I'll put you after Carrie, John. Ross, then Carrie, then John. Go ahead, Ross.
Thanks, Bruce. Perhaps my last statement was rather subtle, so I'll try and be more direct with this one. In doing my job as a counselor, I will vote on those issues that I've had an opportunity to consider. Further consultation with my constituency on these matters probably isn't necessary. My recommendation is that we are going to deal and vote on the issues proposed by these amendments, not necessarily the ones that we've seen already, but the new ones today, then we will need to take the time to consider these and do it properly, and as John pointed out, not rush through them on the fly. I don't believe we can do that over the next hour, but we can certainly try.
Okay, and Carrie, then John?
Yeah, we've been through this any number of times before. The registry constituency instructs its representatives on council how to vote on issues, and to be sure, we need to be nimble and act in response to discussion as it occurs. But in a situation where we perceive nothing that is of any emergency, of any critical urgency, fine, we can discuss these things point by point. But my constituency needs to be given an opportunity to consider what it is that we're voting on. Otherwise, for the same reason, yet again, we're going to be in a situation where we're forced to abstain on action that we actually would like to be able to support and participate in meaningfully. And I do resent the suggestion that there's something timid or irresponsible about representing a constituency on the terms that that constituency is structured for its own representation.
Okay. John?
The only thing I wanted to add to the discussion was that the 10-day period for the terms of reference was not intended to be a redetermination of scope. Scope was intended to occur before the vote. And this council in the last meeting overrode my view on scope. So although we're trying to reinvigorate the scope discussion in the appropriate way as part of this, I think it's an important part of the consideration of the 10-day time period that scope was not determined on these issues before the PDP was initiated.
So, John, I think if I just sort of refer to the version that I posted about a week ago, that was consistent with the issues that were raised in that issues report. And I agree that, and we had that debate in the last meeting, but I just want to clarify that the version that was posted 7 days ago is not something new. It is actually material that came from that original issues report. But what is new is the request that I made to you to review those issues specifically with the view to whether they were in scope or not. Can you clarify?
That's consistent with what I'm saying. I came prepared to discuss what had been posted a week ago. I'm not prepared to discuss at this moment, certainly without further discussion and understanding the new amendments.
Could I put you on the queue then?
Philip. And so what I'd like to do then, John, just on that particular point, because I think this is a useful piece of data for the council, just on the draft that was posted a week ago, can you perhaps answer that question for us? Do you consider the six issues that are currently that were drafted in the message sent on the 8th of February, do you consider those issues within scope?
The issue areas are certainly within scope. It's unclear how those issues would develop and whether or not the scope of those issues would extend beyond the scope of the GNSO or the ICANN process.
Okay, let me ask that again then. In any policy development exercise, there will be a range of submissions from different constituencies and also members of the public. Some of those submissions may well go outside the scope, but that's a normal part of our environment. But specifically the issues as they're currently drafted, are they within scope?
The issues are broadly enough drafted that they are within scope, but could very easily lead to going outside of scope. And I think that's consistent with other PDPs that have occurred. It's certainly consistent with even the recent CCPDP. The same advice I gave to them at that time was there were issues that they were raising that were within scope at the time they were being raised, but could easily lead to policy setting or attempts at policy setting that were outside of scope, and I think that's the case here as well.
Does scope change over time?
John,
Avery was asking the question, John, did their scope change over time?
Yes, and a couple of different issues it did.
But I have a question as well, Bruce.
Yeah, go ahead, Donna.
I didn't introduce any new topics. I edited the existing topics. So regardless of whether or not we can deal with the edits I've made, I have a question about, given I didn't introduce any new topics, how does my introduction of clarifications and amendments change the scope? And my second question would be, John, is it the situation that the board, that we're not able to deal with the need to consider issues? I don't call it on the fly. This is a council call. This is not on the fly.
Well,
this is a scheduled conference call set aside for this purpose.
And I'm not suggesting that it's necessarily on the fly. I was using it as an example of what I believe does happen from time to time on GNSO calls, that the scope of your discussion, whether or not it's within the scope of what the GNSO should be doing, changes fairly dramatically. And as an example, I think the January 17th meeting that focused primarily on the COM agreement and even notes that are posted overnight. If you look at, I'm not intending to criticize individual counselors. I'm certainly not intending to criticize those of you who are highly participatory, like you and Philip. But Philip's note, for example, from his note at 2:25 a.m. that I received, says .com terms of reference. So again, I have questions about whether this is appropriately framed to be a broad discussion about GTLD policy, or whether some of these things are intended to be drafted specifically toward agreements. And I could easily see how these questions could evolve into a discussion about the appropriateness of a single agreement or a couple of agreements as opposed to a broader discussion about GTLD policy?
John, I have an answer for you on that, and that is join us on all our discussions and do what the attorneys at AT&T used to do when I held policy discussions. When I went astray, they reminded me. I think the council would welcome having you or Dan there to remind us if we're going astray. If you look at the terms of reference and every change I made, it is a broad about all the GTLDs. I mentioned .museum and .arrow that are also out for public comment. The terms of reference as presently drafted are clear. If there was a misstatement in a label by a counselor, let's ask him to apologize and move on.
Bruce, I have a question for John, please.
Yeah, I just want to hang on, just take a cue because I'm finding it hard to manage at the moment. So who would like to talk next, basically? So I've got Ross. Anyone else?
I put it within a cue from some time ago.
And Bruce, Maureen, just briefly at the end of the queue, please, or somewhere in there.
Philip, Maureen, anyone else?
Yeah, I've just got a direct question for John on that last point, Bruce. So.
Yeah, okay. I just want to see anyone else. I just want to make sure I'm giving everyone a chance to speak. So, Ross, Philip, Maureen, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Ross.
Just quickly, John, is it the, from a purely a procedural standpoint or a legal standpoint, a scope standpoint, i.e. based on the bylaws, is it the discussion that is of concern, or is it the, are you more concerned about the discussion leading to faulty recommendations down the road, so therefore you're more concerned about the recommendations being out of scope, i.e.?
As I said, I think the topic areas are within scope. But does that answer your question?
No, you were specifically, you just used the word discussions a lot. And I've always been, personally speaking, if we're having an off-topic discussion, sort of like we are kind of now, i.e. this wasn't really totally on the agenda, that's fine, but at the end of the day, as long as the work product is, hangs together, doesn't violate the rules, i.e. we're not making recommendations on things that we shouldn't be making recommendations on, or are we just, we should avoid these out-of-scope discussions wherever possible?
Well, it depends, and the reason I would raise the word discussion in particular is because some of the issue areas that you're approaching have antitrust implications.
For?
Depending on how the discussions go and what happens in various constituencies and how they're framed, certainly discussions around pricing could be very sensitive.
No, but who does it carry implications for? Would it carry implications
for
me or for
ICANN? It carries implications for the individual counselors participating.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the clarification.
And I'm sorry, don't you think it's important we ask you to clarify which of the ones have antitrust implications, John? That is something we always need to do.
Well, I thought that one of your amended clauses seemed to go directly to that issue in pricing, or at least that seemed to be the sensitivity that I noted.
I think we should go through this. You can ask the question. I'm happy to answer it.
Okay. Well, look, I think I had Philip, then Maureen. Go ahead, Philip.
Thanks, Bruce. I think essentially I'd like to speak in favor of what we heard from Avery a moment ago. Let's not talk about process and everything else. Let's get on with our job, which is basically item three of this rather short agenda, and we should have been getting down to the substance of talking about the terms of reference of the PDP that we've agreed to go ahead with. I think in relation to descriptions and everything else, and let's be aware that many of us are laymen, some of us are public relations professionals, some of us are legal professionals, some of us choose to communicate in short and simple words, so it's understood what the general topic areas are. Others need to nuance their communications for other reasons, but let's not get hung up on that. Let's talk about the substance of what's there. I had a first look at Marilyn's changes, and I'm speaking now as a councillor, not as a member of the BC, in the middle of my afternoon between two meetings. I saw that for a few seconds. In the time of this call, I've been able to read through those in some detail. I hope everybody has it on this call also, and if not, why not? And frankly, the changes made by Marilyn are the clarifications of context, or a few clarifications of the TOR, which is already well drafted in the first instance. I don't think there's any complication here. And I think it's just a question of us doing our job, going through the words, and seeing if we can agree to what is there. And if a particular cause is a cause problem, then fine. But then it's not them. It's dead easy.
Okay. And Maureen? Maureen Kepler?
Yes, hello, sorry, couldn't get the mute button off. Yes, just to follow on what Philip has said, the parts where Marilyn has made changes that are clarifications, I think that that's all fine and good and welcome. If there are changes that relate to future applications of the terms of reference, and I believe those were your terms, Philip, then that relates back to my original statement and my initial concern, which was that I don't want the terms of reference to be limited by being too specific in certain areas as terms of reference, because if they are, then they may, by default, prevent us from looking at other areas, or they may have us focus inappropriately or with too much emphasis on certain areas. So I am generally, and I'm speaking generally, in favor of terms of reference that are broad enough and clear enough to state the work that needs to be done without getting into the specifics, because when you start to do that, then you tend to leave out other specifics. So I would rather we look at them. If there are clarifications, fine, but I see some that I think may indeed be too specific to be included in the broad terms of reference. So that is my original concern, and it continues to be my concern.
Okay. So what I suggest we do now is I think we've heard the different views, and I understand from what I'm hearing is that I think people have seen the initial terms of reference that were posted sort of on February the 8th. The council has, general council has a chance to look at those. I think it's reasonable if we now go through those terms of reference or that thing section by section. I think it's reasonable if someone's making a clarifying point and the council agrees that it's a clarifying point. I think if we're suddenly creating an entire new area of scope, as John puts it, or by making a change, we're substantially changing the scope, then at that point we should have the opportunity to go back to our constituency. So I just want to kind of, and perhaps remind people that we did go through a process of reviewing the terms of reference of the PDP in December of 2005 during the meeting in Vancouver. And we did actually make changes during that council meeting, but there were no changes that substantially changed the meaning of anything. I think it was really wordsmithing it to make the intent of those terms of reference clear, but at no stage did we suddenly introduce an entirely new term or substantially change a term. So just reminding what we've done in the past. So if we can go perhaps to the top, which is the context. What I had tried to do in my posting of the 8th of February is provide a bit of context between this policy development process, which I was, for ease of reference, calling PDP February 06, to distinguish it from PDP of December 05. One of the things that I found after our last meeting, which we had on February the 6th, was that a number of people immediately jumped to the conclusion that we were creating a PDP just for the .com agreement, and I wanted to try and be clear in the context that this is not a PDP about the .com agreement. This is a PDP that was envisaged in the PDP of December 05, in the sense that we need to look at reviewing what the contractual conditions we have on registry agreements and see whether they are appropriate for the future. And in doing so, you know, that touches on the various issues that were discussed in the issues report. So what I've tried to do in the context then is simply say that in December of 05 we initiated a policy process to look around the policy of new GTLDs. And in that context, we're looking at selection criteria, allocation methods, and contractual conditions. I also mentioned that during 2005, there was a process of revising .NET and .com agreements, and there was a lot of discussion that those proposed agreements generated, and that really highlighted for the council the fact that there were broader policy issues involved in those changes, and the council should really look at that in the broad context. And so then I stated that in the 17th of January, we requested an ICANN staff to produce an issues report to try and collect all those issues that were raised. And just see that report.
Bruce, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Are you going to go through this and then go back and talk about the proposed changes?
Yes, I am. I'm just dealing with six
No,
months.
I'm happy. I just was asking you to clarify.
Yep. Yes. Then Section D of the issues report, which collected some of those issues. The General Counsel in that issues report said it would be not appropriate for the policy development process to specifically target a single registry agreement, being the .com registry agreement. Then in our meeting on the 6th of February, the Council clarified that the intention of the request was to seek an issues report on the broader policy issues that relate to contractual conditions of GTLD agreements, as has been identified by the various constituency views. So then the Council, recognising that our PDP of December 05 was specifically about new GTLDs, that there was a need, and it's possible that after the first question we decided there should or should not be any new TLDs, it is possible that that policy process goes no further. And so the view was that we should essentially initiate a separate process, using software terminology here, we're spawning a separate process here, which is to look specifically at contractual conditions on GTLDs more generally, and then at the appropriate point, depending on where the PDP of December 05 gets to, we may then try and merge this PDP back into that. So that was kind of the context I'm really trying to put there, mainly to explain to the external community the sequence of events so that we can understand why this PDP exists separately from the one of December 05. And then I summarised that the goal of this PDP is to determine what contractual conditions are appropriate for the long-term future of GTLDs within the context of ICANN's mission, and that relates to the issues identified in the terms of reference below. So that's what I've tried to put in there as context. And at this point, what I think I'll do is then I think go to Marilyn, who had suggested changes to this section, and then anyone else that wants to suggest any changes to this section. So go ahead, Marilyn.
Sure. When I went back and looked at this section, I think that the context really has to inform not just those of us who are inside ballgame players, but the community as well. And the facts are that the .com agreement, the .NET agreement was posted for public comment and awarded on a set schedule that was understood by the community. The .com agreement was scheduled to be open for public comment in November 2005, and I think the staff could insert the exact date. I believe it was the 11th, but I count on the policy staff for that kind of verification. And then it was to be re-awarded on a particular date, by a particular date in 2006. I would look to the policy staff as well for the validation of that date. June 2005, as a part of a litigation negotiation between ICANN and VeriSign, this date was changed, but the community was not notified. And I think that's an important point to put in here, because we are now talking about a PDP for registry services. And had we been on the original contract re-award, we would not have a crisis in terms of timing. We are talking about a PDP that applies to all of the existing GTLDs. We haven't decided what the answers are, but that's what we're talking about. And I think the timing discussion needs to be put in here in a factual and neutral way. We should also acknowledge that we are aware, we have discussed that .arrow and the museum TLD registry agreements are posted for public comment in regards to renewal, clearly indicating that the discussion we're having is about all of the existing PLD registry agreements. The next change that I put in there was a discussion about the purpose of consensus policy. Consensus policy is required to change the existing agreement. We changed the voting structure and gave double votes to the registries and registrars in order to ensure that they have as much input as they felt necessary, and we established a requirement of consensus policy in order to change the agreement. So I think we certainly should note that is the council's job if we're going to effect changes in agreements, and that is the delivery of consensus policy. I then provided a clarification.
Marilyn, can I interrupt here? I'm having a very difficult time following your amendment simply because I'm forced to refer between two different documents. So if at all possible, if you could refer to specific paragraphs that you're discussing, because I'm almost completely lost at this point.
Ross, I'm talking about the paragraph that starts, the GNSO Council recognizes. I did a markup so you wouldn't have to refer to different documents. Sorry that that wasn't helpful. This is the paragraph that says the GNSO Council.
Got it. Thank you. Yep.
The next paragraph.
Madam, before you continue, please, just a suggestion here. It may be useful in this if we just took these at a paragraph at a time. If perhaps Marilyn gave a short commentary as to each paragraph, reason for change, and if you then asked Council if they had any comment against that, and then we could have a discussion on each paragraph and go through it sequentially.
Sure.
Otherwise.
I think that's probably easy because you've got different concepts there. One concept is about adding some more information about the timing of the agreements, and then the second concept is about the role of consensus policy in a way. So let's perhaps, as Philip suggests, we go to your first suggested change.
Which would be on paragraph 2, starting
paragraph
during 2005.
Yep. So paragraph 2, as it was currently worded, basically said that in 2005 ICANN commenced a process of revising the .NET and .com agreements. The text that Marilyn has added is, I guess, additional context, which is to say that the .com agreement was scheduled to be open for public comment in November of 2005 and re-awarded during 2006. And during 2005, as part of the litigation, that the timing was brought forward. And a draft settlement agreement was posted. So I guess basically I think that's all just factual information, and so it's really a question, is the council okay with those changes?
I have a question about this particular paragraph, Carrie.
Yeah, go ahead, Carrie.
Where in the ICANN bylaws is this actually articulated? And on the one hand, there is obligatory compliance with consensus policies baked into some of the contracts, and now the contracts themselves are supposed to be an expression of consensus policy. Isn't there a recursion there that leads to some logical imbalance?
We're not addressing yet.
Yeah. So I think this paragraph is just basically a statement of what happened in 2005.
That's paragraph 2, correct?
Yeah, paragraph 2. And so my question is, paragraph 2 is just a factual statement saying what happened in 2005, and Marilyn has added some additional facts to that statement about the timing of when certain things were meant to happen, basically.
Okay, I misheard. When Marilyn was referring to a paragraph, she was pointing to a paragraph that was adjacent to the paragraph that I was talking about, which we'll get to in 2 seconds.
Correct.
Okay, got it. Sorry.
Okay, so are there any questions or comments on this paragraph or on the changes from Marilyn? As I say, as far as I can tell, they're factual, and no doubt we could perhaps just check with John Jeffrey. Do you, because John's probably most familiar with these timing, do you believe that's a factual statement, those changes?
It's an interpretation of a contractual term. And I think more importantly, there's about 5 or 6 facts that if you really wanted to set out a factual statement about this,
sorry, what was that, John?
Could you give us the example?
For example, I, if I were to set out a history of this, which I think we have in other places, I would specify the dates of posting, I would specify the specific actions that occurred around it, and I think I would reference the contractual provisions that are being provided as an interpretation, and I think it's particularly dangerous for the council to be offering an interpretation of a contract which is currently in litigation.
I have a question, Bruce. Tony Harris.
Gary has another comment, too, please.
I'm just not following your comment, John. Where are we offering it? We're still talking about paragraph 2 here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what John is saying, Ross, is that that there are... But the original wording doesn't actually make any comments about the contractual conditions. It just basically says that there was a process of revising the agreements and that there's been discussion. That's the current paragraph that I drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Balance made some changes to be more specific in saying that the .com agreement was scheduled to be open for public comment and re-awarded. And I think what John Jeffrey is saying is that if we're going to go down to that level of detail, it should be referring to the specific clauses of the contract and either quoting those clauses directly or otherwise it's getting into a complicated area. Is that what you're implying, John?
Yes, and in fact, one could read that statement as an interpretation of the contractual clause.
Which statement are you specifically referring to, John?
The dates surrounding when... The November reference, the reference to the process.
You're referring to the statement starting with the comm agreement was scheduled to be open and ending with which?
Yes.
The entire red line?
Yes.
John, it's Marilyn.
How is this an interpretation of the contract, John?
If we do not reach settlement, which
mm-hmm.
is one of the possibilities before the board, then certainly an interpretation of those clauses within the agreement will be part of the issue relating to the litigation. These are not... In order to be factual representations of the contract, there should be references to the agreement and references to the specific posting time and the process that was followed.
But isn't this meant to be a factual statement of events, not a factual statement of clauses in a contract?
How about a friendly amendment where we would link to the material that John is referencing? And we would do an insert link.
My preference here, actually, I'm just going to...
I'm still confused. I'm glad somebody has a preference.
Yeah, this is Bruce Tonkin speaking again. I think the danger here, I've tried to word this context fairly generally, and it's really a statement of events at a high level, you know, that there was a common net agreement that was up for discussion, and there was a lot of discussion around that, and that's what led us to this PDP. That's basically what I've said. Now what we're talking about doing is being quite specific about one agreement, and that's really something I was trying to avoid in the whole context. We're not talking about the specifics of one agreement. And by doing that, I think, as John says, as soon as you start opening that can of worms, then you've almost got to do this in a page rather than a paragraph. But anyway, it's a personal preference would be not to, is to keep that part of the discussion out of the terms of reference.
Then let me do this. Let's put everything that I added in that paragraph in square brackets for now, except for, can we keep what's in the first sentence, which says, during 2005, ICANN commenced a process of revising the .NET agreement and awarded the management of .NET. You notice there's a typo, there's an error there, so that should definitely be changed. And put everything in square brackets. After that, in that paragraph. Square brackets meaning I haven't gone home yet, but I might.
Okay, what I suggest we do for the first sentence, my first sentence originally said, during 2005, ICANN commenced a process of revising the .NET and .com agreements. That could be changed to, during 2005, ICANN awarded the .NET
agreement.
Agreement and commenced a process, sorry, awarded. Yeah, look, again, I'm not sure that that's really,
I mean, that is factually correct. I agree, Marilyn. But again, how is it relevant to the general topic?
No. I was just pointing out that if we kept any of my changes in first sentence, that I was an error. I had made a typo in any case. So put everything in square brackets that I added in paragraph, in the first paragraph. Okay?
Yeah, I just think, I'll just restate.
Bruce.
Yep.
When you put things in square brackets, that means there's no agreement to them. So later we can go back and delete them.
Okay.
Can I comment on the last sentence in that paragraph before we bracket stuff and forget about it for the moment?
Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
As long as counsel is noting that the Dot Arrow and the Dot Museum TLD Registry agreements were posted, that period of commentary is closed. Dot Co-op was also there. And in fact, this highlights the distinction between the STLD and the UTLD agreements in the class of 2000. And the three STLDs were supposed to have their renewal proposals posted. The others were explicitly not supposed to have their renewal proposals posted. And there was other stuff that was swapped in the process. This is a very nice segue that I'm not going to take advantage of to the need for discussing significant nuance in individual registry circumstance and requirements.
But Kerry, we can talk about that later.
I said I'm not going to go there. I'm just noting with gratitude to you, Marilyn, that you're raising a subject that others would have to figure out how to raise. But we're not going into it now.
Because one of the issues, as Kerry's pointing out, is because I looked at this section of review in some detail a few weeks ago, and they're all different. So it does make it complicated. So again, I think let's focus on what our objectives are here and whether these changes are really necessary. The objectives here is just to provide some context and just to keep it fairly high level. It's not an attempt to sort of point out how parts of the process have followed or not followed their contractual conditions for a single agreement. I think we can certainly complain about that outside this process if we wish to. But I'm just hesitating that we're going to miss the point. But we're really trying to talk about TLDs generally and really look at what are the terms of reference rather than spending hours on this context.
So, Bruce, I've put everything I offered in that paragraph in square brackets.
Okay, so we're leaving so you're basically saying you're withdrawing your changes to paragraph 2, is that correct?
Considering withdrawing, I think, is the bracket. Means.
Considering withdrawing, okay.
That's good enough for me, let's move on.
the third paragraph then is it the third paragraph?
That's the one that I was premature in commenting on, but I'd still like to make those comments.
Yes, which is...
That again, there's nuance from contract to contract, but one of the things that is found in GTLD contracts is a requirement to adhere to some consensus policy. But if we are now going to have the drafting of those contracts be an expression of consensus policy, we're in a loop here that's going to iterate with unpredictable effect, perhaps. So at what point is notion of expression of consensus policy appropriate to inject into this? And again, what do the bylaws say about this? I mean, is Marilyn's suggested amendment based on any specific wording in the bylaws, in which case I would appreciate being pointed to it?
Right, so the original wording here, in fact, the current sentence as it was drafted in the version of the 8th of February was that as a result of the discussions, the Council recognised that issues such as renewal should be considered as part of the broader issue of contractual conditions for the existing TLDs, and then that it may be more appropriate to have policies that apply to GTLDs generally on some of the matters rather than be treated as matters to negotiate on a contract-by-contract basis. That was the existing statement. The statement that's been suggested by Marilyn here says that the Council recognises that it is the purpose of consensus policy to guide the development of contractual agreements.
And what I'm wondering is what the warrant for that statement is.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Gary. Sorry, Bruce, this is Ross. If you can stick me in the queue, I'm sorry. I'll try and be good.
Yeah, so perhaps let Marilyn just first talk to this point again, and then allow people to comment on that. So go ahead, Marilyn.
I'm sorry. Look, the purpose of you can't modify the contracts except by consensus policy. If council enacts a policy that's not a consensus policy, then it's not binding. So it can't be imposed on the registries and registrars. It's advisory only. So the purpose of passing consensus policy, if we're just here having a smoke and a salad with each other and talking about policy, there's no
yeah, role. But the contracts articulate the extent to which registries are bound by consensus policy.
Yeah, that's true, but consensus policy, if we pass consensus policy, it implicates existing agreements. That's the purpose of it being consensus. That's why we have to have the two-thirds majority vote. Otherwise, I will look to the council of ICANN to give us further interpretations, but we all remember, those of us who were around, the long and arduous debates about the need to change the voting structure so that the registries and registrars have double votes, and going to a two-thirds majority to call it consensus policy and what that means. It is binding.
So I think what Carrie's saying, though, Marilyn, if I can just clarify. You have a contract between two commercial entities. ICANN is a corporation and a registry operator is an organisation. In that contract says, you know, it has a series of contractual conditions, and one of those contractual conditions is consensus policy. And that contractual condition says consensus policy may apply to these areas, which essentially constrain the scope. And then our role as a council is that we're really only able to define consensus policy that is within that scope.
And what Tara's saying is that there's an explicit delineation of what we can pass consensus policy on?
My question is, what is in the bylaws?
Yeah.
It's an innocent question. It has no ulterior purpose. And perhaps it would be appropriate for John to comment on.
Yes, if John's available to comment on that, yes.
I've been listening to the debate, but I don't think I have a clear understanding of the question that's pending.
Okay, I'll put the question. As I understand it, John, in the registry agreements include a section which define where consensus policy is applicable. Is that a correct statement?
Yes.
Okay, so the second statement is with respect
to... It's very broad in its scope, it says...
Let's John McHugh when you're ready.
Yep, sorry, go ahead.
Read the clause if you could, please, John.
I'll have to pause for one moment.
Sure. What pause while John's doing that? I think what the issue here, Carrie's kind of talking about, is that the contracts that define where consensus policy applies, or does the council have the power to define consensus policy that apply to every part of a contract. Is that roughly it, Gary?
Pretty much so.
Yeah, no, I'd still like to talk on this subject, please.
Yeah, go ahead, Ross.
I really believe that Carrie's absolutely right on this. Reading this, you know, taking the conversation a bit away from what Carrie's saying and back to the language that we're discussing here, there's no statement anywhere or no policy stating what the purpose of consensus policy is, and it's certainly not to bound or guide the development of contractual agreements. One of the outcomes of these agreements is that everybody is bound by the policies that we make. Whether or not these contracts can impose limitations on our consensus policy is probably a policy discussion that needs to happen as a result of this. But for us to make that as a statement of fact and the opener in this terms of reference, I think is completely inappropriate.
So would you be making a proposal that we strike the proposed amendments in this paragraph, Ross?
Yes.
But
what about the
current bracket to move on?
Can we just check whether the current wording's okay on the basis of this discussion? So the current wording says, as a result, the GNSO Council recognised that issues such as renewal could be considered as part of the broader issue of contractual conditions, and that it may be more appropriate to have policies that apply to GTLDs generally on some of the matters raised by GNSO Council members, GNSO community members, I guess, rather than be treated as matters to negotiate on a contract-by-contract basis. Is that statement okay? That's the one that's of the 8th of Feb.
Could I have to comment when you're ready?
Yeah, go ahead, Simon.
Bruce, I think there's nothing wrong with your original wording. I think the discussion we've just had is, to my mind, actually the fundamental discussion. And ladies and gentlemen of the council, I think that it is precisely the question as to basically what comes first. Is it bilateral contract, ICANN start the registry, or is it GNSO consensus policy that has precedence, is, to my mind, precisely the issues that my constituency and other constituencies I've heard have with this whole area that has resulted in our desire to have a PDP. It may be that is too big a question to have as part of our context with terms of reference, and that's the case. I suggest we strike it. But I would profoundly recommend to council that we lay this down as a marker, because this, to my mind, is a significant question. Because if I am told that ICANN staff to registry contract have precedence over GNSO consensus policy, I, for one, would seriously consider my participation in the whole ICANN process for the future. And I think many other councils would do so too.
Can Carrie speak too, please?
Yeah, go ahead, Carrie.
What we're essentially doing is we're now asserting, and I haven't heard it said before, that's what's confusing me, that the purpose of consensus policy is to guide the development of contractual agreements. And if that is true, are we not restructuring ICANN? We're essentially putting all of the power in the hands of the GNSO. Is that our intention here? Is there constitutional basis for our making any such attempt? Again, this doesn't resemble any interpretation of the notion of consensus policy or the purpose of consensus policy that I've understood thus far. And yes, I certainly do agree with Philip that it's an absolutely fundamental issue.
Bruce, if I may?
Yeah, go ahead, Ross.
I believe that's exactly what Philip didn't say, Carrie.
I'm always one of us who ends up most confused, I think, and now I'm there again.
But I'll let Philip stand up for himself, but I would say that I completely agree with 100% of what Philip had said, but would add to his statement that our difficulties most often lie in areas where we have no policy and we leave staff and registries and registrars to their own devices to determine as to what the best path forward would be. And it's those holes that I hope to close through this process.
To be sure, those are the holes that need the consensus closure, as it were. But is every single aspect of the contractual relationship between ICANN and the business entities with which it has contractual relationships a matter of a consensus-driven thing?
Bruce, I have a proposal as the submitter of these amendments in the first section.
Yep.
I think this discussion is very important and is exactly the kind of discussion that council will need to have while we're working on the terms of reference. So I'm going to withdraw all of my amendments up to the beginning of the numbered items, all of them. So
Okay. No
further need to discuss anything about the terms of reference. I've withdrawn all of those contributions. I recognize the importance of the discussion we've just been having. This is, in fact, a very important discussion. I believe it can take place during the actual PDP.
Okay. So on the context then, if we take it as read, which is the version I did on the 8th of Feb, are there any other, anyone else want to suggest a change? Okay, that then moves us to terms of reference number one.
Actually, I do. It's Marilyn. I need to hear from John about the last paragraph before the terms of reference. The overall goal of this PDP, therefore, is to determine what contractual conditions are appropriate for the long-term future of GTLDs within the context of ICANN's mission that relate to the issues identified, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I had questions about that as well. I was actually taking that as part of the terms of reference. So.
John, Jeff, were you able to comment on that statement of goal, which was in the posting of the 8th of February?
I read it as a statement of goal, not a terms of reference. I'm not clear what I'm being asked.
Okay. Is that goal appropriate, I think, is what I'm asking. So in the context, we've just had this discussion about whether we're defining the contracts or not, but it just says the goal of this PDP is to determine what contractual conditions are appropriate for the long-term future of GTLDs within the context of ICANN's mission that relate to the issues identified in the terms of reference below. Is that statement within scope, I guess.
If I read it correctly, it certainly is. Staff would certainly benefit from guidance from the GNSO on many of these issues. So I can't assume intent, but I can, from a plain reading of the language, believe that it is.
Well, that's a good start. If we've got you agreeing that on the plain reading of the language, it makes sense. So, Ross, you had a question?
My question, I'm not sure if it's for you or for John. I'll let either one of you speak to it. My question is whether or not we should be discussing contractual conditions or policy recommendations. I understand our role is to make policy recommendations, not develop contractual conditions. So perhaps we could change the wording to reflect that, if appropriate. If John doesn't have a concern with that, then I don't.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly where my head was. I would think, for instance, that perhaps it should say what policy is needed to guide contractual conditions.
Yeah, I was thinking that could be better wording. Let me just have a crack at it. It could say the overall goal of this PDP, therefore, is to determine what policies are appropriate for the long-term future of GTLD. I'd actually probably just remove the contractual conditions terminology and just use policies. So it just basically says the overall goal of this PDP is to determine what policies are appropriate for the long-term future of GTLDs within the context of ICANN's mission that relate to the issues identified in the terms of reference below.
I think that's actually too broad, Bruce, because this particular PDP is focused. And that goal would actually address both of the PDPs.
Well, that was my next question, actually. Which long-term future are we referring to here?
Let me clarify what my change. The last phrase of that sentence is it's determined what policies are appropriate that relate to the issues in the terms of reference below. So the terms of reference are defining what issues that we're working on. So I restate that. So the goal of the PDP is to determine what policies are appropriate for the long-term future of GTLDs that relate to the issues identified in the terms of reference.
Oh, fine. Okay.
Great.
I'm with you. I'm happy with that.
Okay. So
for the MP3, this is Marilyn Cade.
Thank you, Marilyn. I'm sure that people have recognized your voice by now.
Bruce, it's Maria.
Yes, Maria.
Bruce, sorry, would you just mind repeating that? I didn't capture the last change there.
Okay, I'll reread it. The overall goal of this PDP, therefore, is to determine what policies are appropriate for the long-term future of GTLDs within the context of ICANN's mission that relate to the issues identified in the specific terms of reference below.
Thank you.
Okay, so that takes us then to the terms of reference, which is the first topic being renewal. And the current wording, which is, I've really just taken this from what the staff had prepared more or less in the report that was produced in January. But basically the first item in there was examine whether presumptive rights of renewal serve to promote the core mission and values, including promotion of competition, examine whether presumptive rights of renewal encourage a long-term view of operations in terms of investment, examine under what conditions a presumptive right of renewal should be deemed unjustified, and then it says, while recognising that several current agreements have this right of renewal, use the findings to determine if should be included in all registry agreements. Now, one of the issues here is I think you could have a policy about renewal that would define what would happen to a new agreement that's signed. I guess it's more difficult to decide what you do with an agreement that's currently signed that has a provision here. That's just a comment I would make. Anyway, I'll open the queue then on this topic. Marilyn, you had some changes that you had suggested here?
I had. In the interest of speeding this along, let's deal with whether or not we can make sure that the changes are for purposes of clarification. It seems to me that we're looking at whether the presumptive right of renewal is about benefits to the ICANN community. And that is a question that I think we should ask as we're going through this. Because the presumptive right of renewal may definitely be of benefit to the registry, but our job is to develop policies that are about the good of the entire community and the stability and security of the Internet. I think we should ask whether it's necessary or beneficial to encourage in terms of investment and infrastructure. Some people might take the point of view that competition is the best way to encourage investment in infrastructure. It's been proven in some parallel industries that because of the threat of competition, an incumbent will make a significant investment. A presumptive right of renewal might actually discourage investment. So I think we should examine this, whether it's necessary or beneficial. That's 1B.
If I may, Bruce?
Yeah, go ahead, Ross.
I kind of like a little bit of both what you and Marilyn have put forward. So to the extent that we could modify Marilyn's language in the first sentence of 1B to read whether or not there are benefits and what those benefits are.
I like that.
I just think it would be very helpful.
Sure.
The last few words of that second sentence seems to be kind of Cludgy, I take that to mean that we are looking to encourage a long-term, what do you mean by long-term view of registry operations? By whom? And what is the difference between investment and infrastructure investment?
Okay, investment and infrastructure investment didn't actually, I added the word infrastructure investment because I wasn't exactly sure what the term investment and infrastructure meant.
Okay.
I know what investment means, and I know what infrastructure is. Infrastructure, for instance, is typically the harder part, right? It's the hard part of the technology that you buy and embed in a network. You might be making a software investment in people, in software programs, et cetera, that may or may not be part of the infrastructure. Your customer service support, I'm not sure, would always be viewed by people as being infrastructure, but it certainly could be a part of your investment.
So the I didn't hear you talk about market investment, i.e. Public investment.
Yeah, building the brand.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. I didn't talk about market investment. I didn't understand the question, sorry.
So you talked about the registry operator making their own investments? Whenever I've talked about investment in this concept, it's always been about market investment, i.e. Venture capital or seed capital or shareholder capital, et cetera.
The question would be, does the presumptive right of renewal give the, I'm a little lost here, but provide the opportunity to the registry to get venture capital or seed capital? Is that the question?
Does it encourage or discourage capital investment in the registry operations market?
I'm not sure, Ross, that the source of financing of a registry is
something that we need to be examining.
Well, so presumptive right of renewal is affecting access to funds. I think it's a very important consideration.
I see, because you're thinking about new entrants.
If an entrant can't get money, they're not coming around. That's a stability issue.
Okay.
Could I just on the queue?
Yep, Philip, anyone else want to speak on this?
Yeah, this is June.
June, yes.
Anne Maureen, please.
I think we need to include broader picture of infrastructure right here. I don't see the region to limit that infrastructure investment to registry operators only, because registry is also very big and important part of the infrastructure, but there are registrar communities and there are ISPs and so on. So in order to build bigger and better infrastructure, we also need to scope other parts of ICANN community as a part of infrastructure investment.
That's a great point.
Say investment and leave a period at it? Many kinds of investment?
That sounds like a good solution. That would give the boss that would encompass what June said and what you said, I think.
Yeah, that's fine. This MP3 is a matter of the public record, and I'm sure that one of you that's going to be sitting on this task force will actually bring this point up, so that's great.
So the modification, the amendment, would be to strike the words investment and infrastructure, and it would now, the end would be view of registry operations in terms of investment, period.
That's probably cleaner, yeah.
Or you could even shorten it up to encourage long-term investment.
Long-term investment, got it. Who said you
in terms of long-term investment, that what you're suggesting, Ross?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then strike and infrastructure production at the end.
Yeah.
So it currently reads, examine whether presumptive rights of renewal encourage a long-term view of registry operations in terms of long-term investment. And then the other thing that Marilyn's suggesting is putting in a comment there about benefits to the ICANN community. Is that right?
I'm working off of Marilyn's amendment, Bruce. So what I was actually, the proposal I was making was slightly different than the one you spit back.
Can you reread it then? Yes.
So what I was agreeing to was that, in the second sentence anyways, including whether such a presumptive right of renewal is necessary or beneficial to encourage long-term investment.
Okay. And what about the first sentence?
I thought we'd long ago agreed on that. I forgot what we've agreed to.
Okay, which is examine what benefits to the ICANN community are.
Oh, whether or not there are and what they are. I didn't have specific language, but there was the kind of the and or question.
Yeah. So I'll reread this.
Let me see if I can type something up while you're talking.
Hey, Bruce, this is Kurt.
Yeah, go ahead, Kurt.
I think limiting the language to whether a presumptive right of renewal is necessary to encourage long-term investment is constrictive. We're looking for ways that will enhance security and stability. So we want it to contribute to long-term investment, but it doesn't have to be necessary.
Kurt, I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Well, I don't have the wording that you're currently considering in front of me, but what I understood was just said was whether presumptive renewal right was necessary to encourage long-term use or investment. Is that correct?
First sentence says, examine whether or not and what benefits to the ICANN community are provided by a presumptive right of renewal.
Right.
So that's pretty broad.
I understand that.
The benefit could be security and stability. The benefit might be competition. The benefit might
that's
be
correct.
Diversity of
yep.
Registry infrastructure. The benefit is not defined there.
Yeah, my question went to the next sentence. Then.
Okay, can you reread what you think this thing should say now, Marilyn?
Well, the first sentence says, examine whether or not and what benefits to the ICANN community are provided by a presumptive right, strike S, of renewal. Then it should be comma, including whether such a presumptive right is necessary or beneficial to encourage a long-term view
of registry operations in terms of long-term investment. That's a little kludgy. I'm not sure. Maybe it's
quite long-term when you've done it.
Whether presumptive pride is necessary or beneficial to encourage a long-term view of investment. Period.
Investment in registry operations, I think.
Okay. Investment in registry operations, period.
So I've actually got the language that I was rattling around that first sentence, Bruce.
Yep, go ahead.
So this is actually quite different, just in construction. So I'm going to preface it with that, so I hope not to shock anybody with what I'm about to say. It's not intended to change the intent in any way, shape, or form, but it's always, when we talk about presumptive right of renewal, we're actually lumping in a bunch of different concepts in there. We're talking about the term of the agreements. We're talking about the terms that those agreements are canceled by, i.e., can they be canceled by ICANN? Can they be canceled by the registry operator? Can they be canceled prematurely? Do they have to wait till the agreement runs out its full term? We're also talking about the rebid or lack of rebid considerations contained in that agreement. And those are the concepts that people pack into presumptive right of renewal. So I've put this sentence together with that in mind. So the first sentence in this paragraph would be, examine whether or not the term expiry and cancellation conditions and rebid considerations, parentheses, right of renewal, close parentheses, provides benefit to the ICANN community, and if so, what they are.
Austin?
Okay. Is that the whole paragraph?
No, that's just the first sentence.
Can you restate that for me?
Would you like me to restate the whole paragraph for you?
No, just restate that. Well, right. I think I'm just trying to deal with one section, 1B,
okay,
as an entire unit. I think that's just easiest. So if you can read out what that entire unit should read.
Okay. Examine whether or not the term, comma, expiry and cancellation conditions, comma, and rebid considerations, open bracket, ellipsis, right of renewal, in caps, close ellipsis, close bracket, provide benefit to the ICANN community, and if so, comma, what they are, including whether or not such conditions are necessary and or beneficial to encourage long-term investment in registry operations, period.
Okay, is everyone okay with that wording?
I'm happy with it. Others?
Okay.
Okay, Ross, can you just send that wording to the council list?
Certainly.
At least, just for the purposes of the staff being able to pick up it,
yep,
minutes of it.
Okay.
So just label it 1B, just so we can see what it is.
No, you know, I'm sorry, this is Kurt. It seems like that's trying to capture too many things in one sentence. You know, leaving the sentence essentially the way it is, but perhaps taking what's an introductory clause there that Ross added and putting it under the main thrust as part of the considerations to determine if that main thrust is met is probably a better way to outline the issue.
Bruce, are we still doing the care warning here?
Yeah, go ahead, Maureen.
Yeah, I like the intention of what you've written, Ross. I still have problems with the words like necessary and beneficial because they are so open to interpretation. I think it's cleaner if we go back to leaving out those qualifiers and just stick to the purpose, which is to examine whether or not what you have said so eloquently, Ross, does indeed contribute to or enhance the operations, the stability and security of the benefits, whatever the benefits are of ICANN. We don't have to get into the specifics, but I'd like to leave out those words that lead to perhaps sometimes arbitrary judgments. Those words being necessary and beneficial.
I think they can be left out. The conditions will either encourage investment or they won't.
That's it. You've got it. Exactly.
I'm not sure if your sense of I understand your sensitivity in terms of the potential vagueness there, but I think to my mind what those words are hinting at is the difference between merely the joy of investment for the benefit of that of those who invest the supplier versus the beneficial results to the wider community in terms of that investment. And I think that phrasing is intending to capture that distinction.
Does it, though? I mean, I agree. I think it must benefit the broader community. If there's any interpretation that it's the benefit to the individual investor, then we're back to square one with our interpretation again. I guess I'm just a little sensitive about this, having looked at some of the difficulties that arose around interpretation of some of the terms in the RFP for the last round of sponsored GTLDs. So words that can be interpreted one way or another are, I think, best left out at this stage. Just an opinion.
Maureen, I'm sorry, you're expressing a concern about the evaluation process of the sponsored GLP?
Yeah, just in general. I'm just, you know, in other processes too, just that I'm a little gun-shy about putting words like necessary when it's necessary according to whom. And I think that Philip's point is well taken, that if we can specify that it is of benefit to the community as a whole, then that's fine, but we don't want to be in a position where it could be interpreted that the benefit is to the investor.
I think that maybe we can just wrap up this bullet and move on. And if we don't have agreement, let's put it in square brackets and come back to it.
Okay, I'm in agreement with that.
Just as a point for the council to consider, I'm wary of the time. So we're now 2 hours and 10 minutes into this call. So I'm happy to keep working through this, but I just want to get a sense of council members available to keep going through this.
I'm good for the next 3 hours.
Can I make a comment on that very question you've just asked, Bruce?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Wordsmithing is great, but you're right, it takes up time. And it seems that we've come to some general agreement on what we want these terms of reference to do. So given that for a lot of people they haven't had much time to look at them, I'm wondering if we could in fact do this not on the call but offline and get back to it. Or does that throw our timeline off too terribly?
I really oppose that. We've invested the time to do this. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you, Marilyn. We have to move this ball forward. We're not great at working on the list. Otherwise, these changes would have been incorporated. We already have something we agree on.
I think that's right, Ross. I think, and one of the reasons why I'm in favour of the odd face-to-face meeting, because I think you're stuck in a room for a day. You actually have to get it done.
That's right.
Okay. Well, let's proceed then.
So we are agreeing on 1B, or are we putting in brackets moving forward?
Let me just make a comment just related to my previous comment. I guess we should be not trying to get everything absolute perfect here in terms of wordsmithing, because otherwise it'll be an hour per point. I just want to make that as a general comment. So perhaps if someone would like to read what the current version of 1B is currently now.
The one I sent to the list, Bruce, read, examine whether or not the term expiry and cancellation conditions and rebid considerations, in brackets, rights of renewal, provide benefits to the ICANN community, and if so, what they are, including whether such conditions encourage investment in registry operations.
I
Okay, so I mean, I think if most people are generally happy, I think we'll just sort of move on. I think the intent's fairly clear there. So the next one, then 1C, is examine what condition currently reads. Examine what conditions the presumptive right of renewal should be deemed unjustified. I'm almost sort of thinking whether that whole clause is needed if we've got the previous one, because they're kind of related, aren't they? We're really sort of trying to understand in the previous clause what are the benefits of rights of renewal.
I agree. I move to delete 1C
completely. I'm not sure I support that because I made an amendment to that.
But your amendment's now incorporated elegantly above in your previous suggestion.
I don't know that it is, but I also think that in any case, if we keep it, I prefer that it read deemed justified, not unjustified. Because I don't know that we should be assuming a presumptive right of renewal. But the point that I think is important to talk about as counsel is whether there are different expectations for different kinds of GTLD registries, such as the sponsored TLDs, that have a responsibility for building a sponsorship community.
Yeah, I think what I'd suggest is I think the first part of that, which is what conditions of presumptive right of renewal should be justified or unjustified, I think is covered in the point above. But I think your second point is a new point, which is worth considering, which is basically under 1C, I'd reword that to say, examine whether there should that be examined whether there should be different conditions? Is that the right wording there?
Yeah, probably. Examine whether there should be different conditions for different kinds of registries.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable thing to be considering, and it relates to sort of Carrie's earlier point that currently there are differences, so we need to understand that.
Bruce, if that change, I withdraw my objection. I support that amendment.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure how it would be reflected in the current wording or anywhere in what we're about to do. But not only are there currently differences from registry to registry, but I don't see how there is any way that there can possibly not be differences from registry to registry. The question is, the appropriate mode for articulating these differences.
Are we still talking about 1C, Carrie, or 1D now?
I'm only talking because my name was invoked. Shouldn't have been done.
1C.
So what you're saying, Carrie, is it's kind of inevitable with what we've got on the table today. The agreements are going to be different. Is that what you're implying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, what's the proposal that's on the table now? Then?
Bruce, if I may, to accommodate Carrie's concern, maybe what we're saying is examine the nature of different conditions for different kinds of digital issues.
Yeah, that sounds actually quite good. It's something that has to be understood in far greater detail than is currently the case as we get deeper into the PDP. And there's also, it's going to be almost irrelevant who it is or however it is when I get around to mentioning it, but I simply have to. And that is that the individual registries are all very much involved in generating comment on the terms of reference, much the same as what we're now considering. And we started with the chair's original statement of this. We're looking at a revised version. And the ability of the registries to contribute their own further revisions to this is going to be blocked. Or if it's not going to be blocked, can somebody explain to me when the appropriate moment might be?
Well, I guess I'd say you've just stated that there's lots of contributions. I haven't seen any of them, Carrie.
But they're in gestation. I've never seen anything under quite such lively discussion as this issue is currently in the GTLD registry constituency, and there is an extraordinary diversity of opinion about what we should be doing. And that's why I'm expressing such frustration about the fact that we're not being permitted to converge on any consensus position that we then can fold into this process. So I'm looking at all of these marvelous ideas that are based on an initial set of ideas, have access to my constituency's further battery of additional ideas, and despair of any appropriate point for injecting them into the discussion.
Bruce, if I may make a comment of substance as opposed to the process, please.
Yeah, go ahead, Ross.
I'd like to kind of take a look at 1C and 1D as being very, very similar in both intent and outcome. Because really what we're talking about, and I'd like to merge them, I guess, is my proposal. I think really what we're talking about in both cases is whether or not these rights of renewal should be standardized across all the agreements, and if not, under what circumstances. And I think we should just stay that. So if that's, I'm asking you and Marilyn who had the, whether or not you would deem that to be a friendly amendment or not.
Well, just speaking for, if you're going to ask that question of me,
mm-hmm.
I was more or less just copying the stuff that the staff report, so I haven't really wordsmithed this. I did personally wordsmith the context, so
okay.
I'll admit to that, but on other bits, I'm just as open as you are to changes. So.
All right, okay.
This is John speaking. Could I add something to Kerry's comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
I think Kerry makes a very good point, and he makes it from a view of a natural conflict, but I think it's an important thing to consider in the broader scope. The businesses that are directly affected by this are not just the registrars or the others that are participating, but they're the registries fairly dramatically, and that we're talking about how we would impact their contracts in the long run. And I think he's making a very good point that he should be provided an opportunity to take these back and discuss them with the constituency.
Highly impressed if the British constituency come to a unanimous verdict on this. I think that would be a triumph for the British constituency, Carrie, and I wish you all good luck in those endeavours.
It is a daunting task. Again, I have never seen such a rich flora of potentially useful ideas, and the process of synthesizing this into something that is in full harmony with these terms of reference, I personally believe would do nothing other than truly benefit the process and the substance of what it is that the process is intended to put forward.
My concern is not the richness of debate, but the likelihood of consensus.
Without having the opportunity to proceed along the consensus-forming path, it's almost a moot question.
Well, I think, Kerry, the important thing to remember here is that we've actually got a well-defined process that we're attempting to follow to the best of our ability. And that process was a consensus-based approach to which we all agreed to many moons ago.
Yeah.
And it stated that, we've got to sit down and work through the terms of reference.
Yeah, but what we're now doing is discussing one counselor's suggestions to modifying the chair's original proposal.
We're discussing, I believe, all submissions that were made and those that are being made during this discussion. And I'm sure had there been additional amendments put forward, we would have been happy to consider those as well. I'm not saying that the position or view of your constituency should be discounted, but simply that I would have been happy to discuss them at this call.
Yeah. So
my fear, Kerry, is that we move from discussion and amendments, as we are doing now, into negotiation. And
I'm in a situation now where I can easily put my I have all of these comments. I can put them to you for due consideration, and it's going to kill the 3 hours that you said you had, Ross. So I don't regard that as a truly fruitful way of doing it. Which is why I again. Regarded as so reasonable and potentially useful, not potentially, reasonable and useful, to be able to take the results of this particular iteration of the process to my constituency and then come back with the next iteration. And to be sure, Philip, it's not going to be beautifully converged, unanimous sentiment, but it's going to be a valuable further contribution to this. And again, given the fact that we are so profoundly affected by the outcome of all of this, I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to wish to do.
And I would also therefore request that my constituency be provided with that same consideration, Kerry.
I think that's absolutely reasonable as well.
Perfect.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. I'm going to make a proposal. This is the terms of reference. This is not the debate, right? What we're now talking about is getting into the details of the debate.
No, we're talking getting the details of the consensus view of the terms of reference. And Kerry's expressed a wish to take this back to his constituents to see if he can get some buy-in. And I think if we all have that same opportunity, it's a wonderful way to approach developing a terms of reference in a time period roughly approximating forever.
Let's see if we can put area where there's not agreement in square brackets and move on, reach agreement on as much as we can. We may even be able to approve the terms of reference except for sections in square brackets, and that would allow us to make some progress. And then we can come back and approve the sections that are in square brackets. I'm taking into account Kerry's proposal and yours of going back for consultations on selected areas.
I would draw my request if the cynicism wasn't detected and it was taken as a serious request of council. I wouldn't want that to actually stand as an actual request of the registrar constituency.
Oh.
Hang on. Can I just clarify the process here then? One of the difficulties is that in our past call, we were focused on the specific advice of the General Counsel, and we didn't. What would normally happen, I think, is there would be some discussion about the terms of reference at that time, and then we're having a break to think about it, and now we're finalising them. I think the benefit of this call is probably that we are actually looking at the terms of reference and thinking about the nuances of the terms of reference and discussing it, which I think is a good thing. And I think it is reasonable that perhaps we just run through the rest of these terms of reference today fairly quickly with the view of sort of identifying whether there's anything substantially wrong or substantial change we want to make. And then we get a new revision out and we provide another, roughly 7 days. We'll have to have a look in terms of scheduling a meeting. But, Carrie, is another 7 days sufficient? Because I think what Ross is getting at is it shouldn't be an uncapped process.
Then I can certainly agree with that. 7 days seems a bit on the minimum side, but it certainly is something. And Ross is absolutely right. I realize that there's an element of derision in this, but it could take forever, and I'm not suggesting that it be allowed to take forever. But on the other hand, zero time is significantly... It's an equally extreme alternative.
But Kerry, I just want to clarify. We haven't. Yeah. I just want to come back to your comment on zero. I don't think you heard zero. This was posted on the February the 8th and notice of this agenda.
Oh yeah, to be sure. But I mean, we are now doing some significant rewording here.
Well,
and again, I have this long list that I'm not going to subject you to.
Sorry, what was the expectation of this call? That we would do minor rewording or no rewording?
My expectation of this call was that we indeed would do rewording and that would be put back to the constituencies for consideration and then move forward.
And the agenda fostered this view? I was fully prepared to come into this meeting and discuss the terms of reference and vote on them, Kerry. So I'm at a loss, and I really do not like the notion that we are now reissuing this for further commentary and further revision in a future council meeting. And I think I've made my point, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
So we're moving on, and we're leaving 1D in square brackets for right now.
I thought we kind of almost had 1D. Hang on, what are we up to now?
We're still on 1C, and we got sidetracked by a big process discussion. And I made a proposal that we actually merge 1C and 1D to really discuss whether or not it's appropriate to standardize the renewal rights across all the agreements or not.
Yes, so I think the point that we're trying to capture here, which is partly the new text that... Marilyn suggested was recognising that there are some differences, and the second part of D relates to that in a way, because it says determinative presumptive renewal should be included in all registry agreements, so there's already some degree of difference there. Do you want to read what you think a new combined 1C and D would sound like, Ross?
Yeah, I've just sent it to the list so if anybody that's reading along at home can follow along. It hasn't hit the list yet. Let me pull it up here.
We got it.
You got it? I didn't get it. So the revised 1C would read, recognizing that not all registry agreements share the same rights of renewal, use the findings from above to determine whether or not these conditions should be standardized across all agreements.
That's fine to me.
Makes good sense.
And you posted that to the list, have you? That's good.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good process, Ross, where we get to see it on the list. Thank you.
If we're now moving to 1E, I
wonder if we could ask Marilyn to explain what she means by that, because I'm not sure about the meaning there, in particular with the phrase to limit to no more than three awards.
I'm sorry. I'm 1E.
Yes,
that's your addition.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was thinking about. Remember, I had been working under extremely adverse conditions in a room with only a few friends from civil society and business, and mostly government. Everyone's supposed to laugh. What I was thinking about is if you decide that there are different treatment, and I was there thinking about sponsored TLDs. You should examine whether there's, if you give a presumptive right, should there be a limit on the presumptive right?
Uh-huh.
I suggested, should it be limited to no more than three or no more than two before you go back to an open competitive bid? That may be a level of detail that can be embodied up earlier. So I think
Martin, that's right. And if you would accept a friendly amendment, I would just strike 1E and...
I accept the friendly amendment, strike it.
Okay.
As long as it's on the MP3 recording and in the minutes that it was a reference to something that should be discussed under one of the other elements.
Yeah. Bruce, over to you. Moving on to 2A.
Okay, so you've struck out 1E, have you? Or the suggested change? Or withdrawn the suggestion, is that right?
Yeah.
And then you're just wanting it minuted that you've made that statement, basically.
Yes.
Thank you. So just note, Glenn, when you come to do the minutes, just to focus on the last two or three minutes, just make sure that's been properly minuted.
Can you just again explain, Marilyn, what you said, or repeat?
As the author of the proposed 1E, I withdraw that proposed amendment and ask that the minutes show that this issue should be discussed. Under the earlier subtopics.
Thank you.
Okay, section two. So section two is the relationship between registry agreements and consensus policies, which seems like a bit of deja vu. I think we had that discussion earlier today. And let's examine whether certain... And bear in mind, I just want to clarify, these are not my personal views. These are just were extracted from the comments from the community. So that's the intent here, and then we can improve the wording. So the relationship between registry agreements and consensus policies, examine whether certain registry agreement contract provisions should be immune from application of consensus policy and how this should be determined. Determine whether sponsored TLD should retain the policy-making authority now delegated in the registry agreements, recognising that current registry agreements, including varying limitations on scope and applicability of consensus policy, examine the extent to which the agreement could state that consensus policies may not affect certain terms of the agreement and determine whether future agreements should be restricted to a uniform scope and applicability of consensus policies. So this is kind of one of the core issues, I think, that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
Clarification, classical clarification there, Bruce?
Yep.
And the clarification is Philip, is this indeed the issue that you referenced earlier about whether consensus policy takes precedence over other decision-making processes?
I think it is. I think that's quite the point there. I probably have a friendly amendment to make to A.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Bruce, if you could stick me in the queue at some point, whether or not Philip wants to go first, then I don't care.
Okay, so I was going to suggest maybe that's, it could be clearly, might be more clear if it says something like examine the benefits to the community if certain registry agreement contract provisions would be immune from application of consensus policy.
So if I'm sorry, would you clarify for us in the Geneva office of the GNSO Council where this amendment fits? I mean, just what you're pointing to?
This is 2A, in which you've made a proposed change to 2A, and I'm suggesting that maybe a clearer phrasing as to what I think is the intent here would be examine the potential benefits to the community were certain register agreement contract provisions be immune application of consensus policy.
Yeah, I think, Philip, though, that should just be a general overriding thing that comes from the goal, because otherwise we're going to have to state that every sentence, you know, is this a benefit to the community? But if we go back to the original goal, it's saying, you know, what is in the benefit.
Okay.
The ICANN submission. Let's not kind of put redundant.
Okay. That's the top of the list. That's fine. I just.
I just inserted the word whether because I thought it made more grammatical sense.
It's already there, actually, Maren, so I'm not quite sure why you.
Oh, sorry. I must have edited it out. Never mind. I see.
Are you withdrawing that then, Marilyn?
I'm withdrawing the double whether.
Is it my turn, numbers?
Yes, go ahead, Ross.
Thank you. This may be just some nitpicking, but in 2A, I would really like to use the language found in 2C to the extent possible. Really, what we're talking about here is consensus policy limitations. You know, the terms immune and application, you know, these are just kind of, it's new language. I try and shun new language wherever possible. So if we could talk about limitations on consensus policy in 2A versus immune from application, I think that would just make it a lot clearer as to what we're talking about. In 2B, I would like to expand the scope of that slightly to discuss the appropriateness of that policymaking capability in the light of the GSO, whether or not the existing policymaking authority is appropriate given the GNSO's responsibility and its scope of policymaking activities.
So what do you propose there? Just read that one out again for me, Ross.
I'm just tossing out bon lots, Bruce. No, I'm typing, actually, so I was hoping that would spark some discussion while I did that.
So 2B at the moment says, examine whether sponsored TLD should retain the policymaking authority, which is, you know, obviously a big call. Some suggested changes to that are, Marilyn had put in, is and whether there are ever circumstances and what they are, where a sponsoring entity should lose their policymaking authority, even if maintaining the management of the registry. Or alternatively, examine whether the policymaking authority should be redefined, and if so, what changes would be needed, and under what circumstances such changes would be applied. That's kind of suggested wording, and your wording is again, Ross?
Should be determined. So in 2A, I propose that we state examine whether consensus policy limitations in registry agreements are appropriate and how these limitations should be determined. And I haven't finished typing out 2B yet.
So in 2A, we just struck the other edit that I made, right? The one at the end.
Yes, in fact, there's no change to 2A.
Right. So there's no change to 2A.
Yep.
My suggestion would be that 2BU1, the alternative phrasing, maybe is more elegant than 2B amended. Are you happy to use the 2B1?
2B1. This is the thing where would they lose their policy making authority but keep the management of the registry, and what those circumstances would be. I mean, I think that's, you know, a reasonable thing to consider. I'm not making any comments on whether there would be any, but I think it's a reasonable
thing.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a question of sure.
Okay. And Ross, you're still typing what you think the wording should be?
Yeah, I think actually there's an alt here on the next page. I haven't even looked at that. So, Philip, you were saying the alt here would be...
No, my suggestion was I thought the alt was clearer wording. We should adopt the alt wording. 2B1.
So here's let me just put it out in plain language, because I'm having a hard time actually typing this out. Personally speaking, I question whether or not there is policy in place that governs the relationship that the sponsored TLDs have with ICANN. I would like to take a look at that relationship in the light of in the context of the GNSO's policy-making responsibilities, and whether or not this is an appropriate or an inappropriate delegation, given the existing policy governing the policy and the bylaw considerations around the GNSO's policy-making responsibilities, and if indeed it is an inappropriate delegation, what new policy would need to be developed in order to make it an appropriate delegation?
So Ross, if I can just clarify, because at least my understanding at a high level, my understanding of the idea of the sponsored TLDs is that they would be defining the policies around things like eligibility for registrants within that TLD. That's kind of, I would have thought that was generally narrowly defined. So in other words, if it was .travel, the .travel TLD would be responsible for deciding which travel organisations can be members of .travel. I didn't envisage that they would be separately defining policies for transfers. I would have thought that was something that was a consensus policy. So I just wanted to kind of get that sense of it. But I have been confused by the terminology in the agreements as to exactly what the scope is.
Right. And I think that's an important topic. 2B1 captures the discussion of that. I wasn't trying to make a judgment about the change, but, you know, in my view, not all of the sponsored TLDs have the same characteristics. Some have a very well-defined community, such as .museum and .travel. Others may have a very different, more broadly defined community, such as .asia or .tel. Lumping them all into the category of sponsored, which is where we are today, I think we need to have an examination of what limits, if any, exist to the policy-making authority, and that's all I was trying to get at.
Yeah, and I'm questioning that in terms of, first principles. Right now, according to the ICANN bylaws, the GNSO makes GTLD policy, full stop.
It actually recommends GTLD policy.
Right. I'm sorry. We recommend. And my apologies. That's a comment slip, and I accept your point, Bruce. So we make those policy recommendations. Somewhere along the way, somebody gave the sponsored TLD operators a contractual right to make that same policy. Nobody ever specified the limits of that policy or the extent to which the GNSO policy make recommendation capability was changed, modified, or even affected. And that's the conversation I want to have. It's completely unclear at this point.
Can Gary comment on this?
Yeah, go ahead, Carrie.
At least in the class of 2000 sponsored TLD contracts, there's a very, very clear statement of what the limit of the delegation is. I mean, it's the STLD charter.
No, but that's the contract, Carrie. There's no policy to support that contract. And there's bylaws that completely conflict with that, right? So
Carrie, can you confirm that my understanding is correct, is it? Because by charter, I'm thinking of eligibility and things like that. Is that?
What the charter does is say what the sponsor, what it is that is being delegated to the sponsoring organization, what it is that the sponsoring organization, and the Dot Museum case, I can certainly speak authoritatively about that. And
yes.
The International Council of Museums has a definition of what constitutes a museum. The Dot Museum charter says that it's the sponsoring organization's within the sponsoring organization's authority, and it is the sponsoring organization's responsibility to see to it that no entity holds the name of Dot Museum that is not a museum as the International Council of Museums defines it. Full stop. That's what we get to do. And I don't think, nor the GNSO Council, I would think, feels itself particularly better suited to comment on what constitutes a museum than the NGO that's been around for the past 6 years.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah. That's kind of what I understood it.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. I mean, there's nothing beyond that, but on the other hand, there's nothing less than that.
Bruce, in that case, now I understand that better. Could I suggest an alternative phrasing of 2B completely, which would be examining the nature or sponsored TLD policymaking authority and any need for change.
Okay. There's actually two more things that we might want to consider here. The one is that the notion of sponsorship did actually change quite significantly between the 2000 and the 2004 batches.
Right.
And that is, in 2000, there was a pre-existing, very well-bounded community that was around for a long time without any thought of a TLD. And there was also an organization within that community that could genuinely claim to be representative of it in international contexts. The argument needed to be made that community would be served by a TLD of its own. And what the characterizes the 2004 thing is that there is a definition of community to be built around the TLD, that there's a notion of community. Travel corresponds to a community, and with that domain, the sponsor can create something. So, on the one hand, it's a TLD in the service of something that pre-exists, and the other hand, it's a TLD to be placed in the service of what it might gather. And as we begin the discussion of IDN on the top level, we may discover that we have yet a third notion of policy delegation in the GTLD space. Completely different, brand new notion.
So we
need to be very, very well attuned to the kinds of needs that might be expressed by varying kinds of communities as it maps into what it is that we are making, that what we are recommending policies about.
But Carrie, your agreement with ICANN is the policies that are delegated to Musée d'Orsay are much broader than simply managing a charter.
They are?
Absolutely. There's 17 different areas that are delegated to you, one of which is your management of that charter. I can go through the 17, but
jog my memory and just give me one salient thing that is not immediately bound to the notion of an agency within the museum community serving the museum community.
You have the right to pick. You have the right to specify terms of agreement between registrants and registrars.
We do.
Absolutely.
Louis, does the following phrasing then recapture the point made by Carrie, which would be to examine the changing nature of sponsored TLD policy-making authority and whether there is need for change?
Well, I mean, there clearly has been a shift. The original S and the latter S differ in significant regard, and it's entirely conceivable that there will be yet another S-ness to appear in this, and we need to be very, very much to have our eyes peeled as these requirements, needs, purposes manifest themselves.
these are just kind of examples of the kind of a discussion that would be under these topics. So I guess what we're trying to do here in the terms of references may be state them fairly generally. So the general thing is, you know, examine what the differences are, I suppose, between the authority of sponsored versus non-sponsored, and whether that should change. Is that's more or less what we're looking at?
Exactly. My suggestion there was examining the changing nature of sponsored TLD policy-making authority and whether change is needed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just fairly simple. It's not sort of making any comment about what they should be or not be.
I'm not sure changing nature is quite the right term.
It's
noting new needs somehow. The requirements associated with that museum certainly are subject to redefinition, but their essential nature isn't going to change. The notion of museum hasn't shifted under our feet, so we need to redefine that museum.
No. That wasn't the intent.
I fear my point is being lost in the shuffle here. I do not believe that there is any policy to support the notion of sponsored TLDs anywhere in all of ICANN's folklore. 100% of what constitutes a sponsored TLD and its relationships and its contracts and all of those things comes from the contract that the sponsored TLD signed with ICANN.
Are you suggesting that it would have been reasonable for ICANN to retain the right to decide who is a bona fide member of the air transport industry I'm genuinely confused.
I'm just saying there's no policy on this matter. This makes it one of those dark areas where there is no policy. So all we have is contracts that were settled upon by two parties. And that's fine, but it's causing us a lot of problems in other areas, right? And
it's not necessarily the wrong answer. It's just that there's not a policy because there's no policy. When you sign a new sponsored agreement, it can be completely different again. Whereas if you have a policy saying for sponsored agreements, they will define the nature of membership or something, and it's a broad ICANN policy.
Yeah, but if what is lacking here is some clear statement of when it is appropriate for X number of things to be delegated to an agency within the community that the TLD is being established for, that's quite doable. If we need to have this stuff clearly stated, I can't really see why it would be a particularly difficult thing to state. And again, the interesting challenge in all of this is accommodating the richer STLD space that's appeared since the initial STLDs were established, and anticipate the further richness that we're dead certain going to encounter as we get into the intricacies of IDN and the TLD space.
Okay, may I make another attempt at phrasing for TB then? Examine the diversity of TLD policy-making authority and the need for change?
Yeah, look, I think
there's a need for accommodating that diversity.
Okay.
Yep, that's fine. So what we're trying to get to here, and this is the core, really, I think, of the whole section two, is that there are a lot of decisions that have been taken over time on a contract by contract basis, or maybe even on a round by round basis. There's the round of 2000 and the round of 2003-2004, and what Ross is saying is that a lot of this would be helped by a clear policy that guides those things.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, Bruce, if we're moving on to 2C.
What is the proposed language with 2B, or 2B1, I guess? Or 2B-Alt-1, or whatever it is?
Let's just call it 2B, and let's just get Philip to restate 2B. And maybe, Philip, if you're in front of a computer, if you could email it, would it help?
Okay. I'm going to say the first bit, and Carrie's going to give the last phrasing. Determine the diversity of sponsored TLD policy making authority and the need for change.
That diversity, can you do everything that you said up to that need for change stuff?
Examine the diversity of sponsored TLD policy making authority.
The diversity of SLD policy making, the policy requirement, and
the diversity of SLD policy requirement.
Yeah. And accommodate it appropriately in whatever it is we're accommodating it in. Can I ask Bruce a procedural question while we're dangling in the middle of this? We're on point two of how many points, and we're almost at the end of hour three of this call. When are you planning to...
We've only been taking amendments for the last hour, though, Kerry. So. Sorry, Bruce.
Well, I did ask Bruce the question. I almost need an answer. I have to get off the call, and I'm carrying a proxy here. So.
But we have very few proposed amendments except for 5A, and we've already talked about that. Except for 5, and we've already talked about that. So we're pretty much into... We're pretty close to ending.
Okay.
There we are. Yeah, I don't think there's a list. I mean, what we're basically doing is amendments people have proposed on the list, and that's not a privilege that's accorded to any one council member. All council members were free to contribute via the mailing list over the last 7 days. So the ones that have been submitted so far, as you say, I think if we finish off on 2, I think that's probably enough for today, and then we'll just do a fresh draft of this after this meeting and send it out, and I'll try and schedule another call to try and complete it.
So in the interest of that then, Bruce, if we are actually going to extend the deliberation on this document, I'm going to table my concerns around this particular clause for now, take a look at what Philip and Kerry have drafted up, and if I get comfortable with it over the weekend, perhaps we can just move on.
Well, Philip and I can take this offline. I mean, as you might imagine, it's a crucial concern for the sponsors that I'm representing here, and I would be delighted to sit together with him to do the most beautiful job of wordsmithing that will put everybody's concerns to rest.
Absolutely. I'm not disagreeing with Carrie. I think we're just trying to find the right words.
Yeah. We'll do it offline.
Yep, okay. And then 2C, Marilyn added the terms, recognising that current registered agreements include grandfathered or staff negotiated. I'm not sure that those words are really necessary. I mean, I agree they might... For the purpose of the policy, I think it's just useful to know that the agreements currently have varying limitations. Whether they were staff negotiated or not, I don't think really adds anything.
Okay, so strike them.
And then 3B, 3 is policy for price controls.
Right, and I do think it needs to be policy.
Yes, I think that's a very useful amendment there, and I think this partly relates to what John Jeffrey was suggesting, that if we end up with a policy saying this agreement, the price should be X, that's probably not where we should be heading. Whereas
right.
The policy
we
on
should
whether we have them or not is different.
Huh.
Yeah.
The word policy for... and I was trying to get to the point, we're not going to talk about what the prices are, we're going to talk about...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And then 3B, you've got... Oh, yeah, okay, while not discussing the prices of registry services examined. Yeah, I think that's... John, Jeffrey, do you sort of agree those are reasonable adjustments to that? So we're not discussing pricing directly, we're talking about whether there should be some form of price control or not. Is that a reasonable discussion?
Yes, that in fact was what I was mentioning earlier about how I thought Marilyn's language was an improvement here.
Okay, good.
Okay.
And then 4, which is ICANN fees, determine how ICANN's public budgeting process should relate to the negotiation of ICANN. Now, when you've added in what transparency requirements, so, Mel, this isn't to deal with the public budgeting process. So when you're talking about transparency, you're just talking about the transparency with relation to the ICANN registry fees, not the budgeting process. Is that right?
Well, in the .NET agreement, the business constituency found itself reading in a finally negotiated contract, that is, it was out for public comment, about the establishment of a fund that was in the registry fees that was going to be contributing to security and stability. So that was posted for public comment. And I think that the establishment of new kinds of fees should be posted for public comment.
I've got an objection on 3C that I'd like to come back to, but...
On 3C?
Mm-hmm. We just kind of skipped over 3C, but go ahead.
Well, I did just because I didn't see any changes.
That's fine.
Yeah. So 4C we're on at the moment, which is ICANN fees. I guess, you know, part of the issue, ICANN fees, whether ICANN fees relate, defined and should be subject to policy, then whether ICANN fees should be tailored to business models, determine ICANN's public publishing pressure should relate to the negotiation of ICANN fees and what transparency requirements should exist. And so your issue there, Marilyn, is that you felt that... Is Kurt on the line?
Yes.
Bruce, just a point of clarification. The transparency requirements could be met in the strat plan process, the operational plan process, the public budgeting process. But remember that the users are not on the finance committee. Registries and registrars are.
Yes. Well, they're not on a finance committee. They're on a budget advisory group.
Sorry.
But yes, that's true. But the public budgeting process, I mean, the documents are made public and people do get to comment on it, so I don't think you can say that the whole process isn't public. It's just one element of the process.
But that's fine. That's our conclusion. But again, that policy isn't making conclusions. It's simply saying...
No, I'm just trying to clarify what we're making policy on here, because the... I'm wondering whether you're implying, though, that determine how the public budget process should relate to the negotiation of ICANN fees. I'm just trying to get a sense of that transparency. We're not talking about the public budgeting process. We're just talking about how that links to the negotiation of ICANN fees. And so it's really the transparency on the... Is it the transparency on the negotiation of the ICANN fees or transparency on what those ICANN fees are? I just want to be clear. Because this is specific to ICANN fees, this section. I'm tempted to just kind of, you know, not include that last clause, I guess, Marilyn, because I think... Transparency is a bigger bylaw issue rather than something that relates to that one area. But my question for Kurt, because I just want to clarify the current situation. The current situation with the new sponsored round, Kurt, is what? You're treating each agreement individually and tailoring it to their business model? How does the current process work with respect to setting the ICANN fee?
Yeah, we're having a discussion as part of the technical and commercial negotiations about the business model, and asking the and given some consistency goals across the agreement, general funding goals. You know, we asked the STLD applicant or the STLD candidate to suggest their fee structure, in accordance with their business model, and so they're individually tailored. So you'll see some of the STLDs that are charging $60, $70, $80, or $90 a name pay a higher transaction fee than those that pay $5 a name. Likewise, fixed fees, if there are one, vary by business model and startup requirements.
So let me just explain my concern, because this is where I think this area of policy is an important one. But one of the concerns I would have is what's the relative power relationship in that negotiation? So you've got ICANN staff negotiating a particular fee with a particular registry operator.
And the question is I'd prefer there's a policy that says, you know, there's some basic formula with which you're negotiating within, because otherwise you're in a situation where the registry, ICANN's controlling whether to sign the agreement or not, and whether it goes into the route or not, and a registry operator says, I want to pay 10 cents a name, and then ICANN says, you need to pay $1,000 a name, and in some ways the registry operator might have to pay that to get their agreement signed. It just worries me a little bit that you're in a situation where the power relationship in that particular negotiation isn't clear, whereas if there was an overarching policy that sort of said, you know, for any TLD, a certain percentage of revenue goes to ICANN, or that there's some overall policy, and then the negotiation might be how that percentage is made up, but there's some policy guidance for both ICANN staff and the registry to set the expectations for that negotiation. And so I'm wondering whether what we're really trying to achieve here is perhaps some broad policy or guidelines for the framework for that negotiation, if you like.
I think that the power ICANN wields in negotiation is mitigated. So I didn't feel the power during any of the negotiations, but the power is mitigated by the fact that there are several agreements being arrived at about the same time, and they're all publicly posted. So at the end, if we fully recognize that if one of these agreements, falls out of bed with respect to the rest of the agreements with regard to fee structure, we'll undoubtedly be back renegotiating the fees. And
So
there's that, and then we also have the existing, you know, the existing registry agreements by which the new STLDs are measuring themselves. So there's that. The other comment I would make would be, I don't disagree with what you're outlining as a policy. I hesitate to try to make it formulaic because policy really doesn't lend itself well to formulas because it becomes a little bit inflexible. So I think the one kind of uniformity across the registry agreements regarding funding. I think that there also needs to be certain flexibility across them.
Yeah, so I guess it would be agreeing to principles for how that determination is made.
But in fact, when we're having these negotiations, we all, we understood that we didn't have to get one party to agree to a certain fee structure, or we feel like we're negotiating with eight because at the end they all have to line up logically with one another in some way.
Right. Okay. And so you're achieving transparency by the fact that the agreements are posted prior to signing by the board, basically.
That's right, yeah.
Then I don't see any problem with leaving my parenthetical and what transparency requirements should exist. I think it should be left in. It sounds like it's no problem.
Yeah, all right, that sounds fine.
That's cool.
Okay,
well, I think Bruce's comment went to what the transparency goes to, but it's not clear in the way it's worded what it goes to. So I agree there's transparency in circumstances, and that transparency is already laid out in bylaws and other documents. So I think Bruce's point went to something else, not the existence of transparency, but how it's laid out there.
Yeah, look, I think we'll pick that up in perhaps some minutes of this call. I mean, I don't have a problem with the wording. I just wanted to be clear that we're referring to how that negotiation happens and on what basis. Okay, I think, and we had the discussion of five at the beginning of the call. Are there any, and then six was about investments in development and infrastructure, whether there should be requirements for specific investment levels. Whether they should require specific investment levels. I'm not sure I know there was a specific number that was in the .com agreement. Carrie, are you able to confirm for museum, did you have any requirements in this area? Any contractual requirements to make a particular level of investment?
I would need to double check. I don't think so.
The speaking from experience and having participate in negotiation of one of these agreements, Bruce, oftentimes these fiscal commitments are much more implied than they are explicit, i.e. the registry operator proposes that their data center will look like X, Y, and Z, and then those are enforced through the performance specification. So a certain level of investment is required to fulfill those obligations.
Right, but we're not requiring an investment level, we're requiring an outcome. So if you have some amazing technology that allows you to build a data center for a dollar, you can do
you
it.
You could do it for a dollar, yes, that is correct.
Because yes, you're measuring the outcome, yeah.
Bruce, I'm not speaking in support of the existing wording you propose, but I think the what is written under point six is a very valid point. And I think some issues did arise in the recent round of SDLGs in particular. So I think that what you mentioned there is right. I have to view as well.
So, but just a point of process, Bruce. Are we skipping over five here, or?
I think we already covered that. Unless, but my memory is.
I
still had a little bit because I still had 6 o'clock in the morning for me. It's now 9.
I see.
Yeah. So I think yeah, exactly. The only change I think on five was the title, in which I think we had discussed and had agreed upon changing the title from use of traffic data to uses of downstream services such as.
Yeah, I think that's where there was an agreement, Philip. Because
There was not. Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of agree with Ross as well. I think there's a big difference between services and data, because there is a registry service.
Well, then give me a better phrasing for services.
The way I would have handled five is just take traffic out of it and just talk about uses of data that is available to registries.
Actually, I need to ask a question about that. It wasn't data that was implicated in the site finder situation. It was access to...
That was a registry service, yeah.
Yeah, those are registry services. My concern here with the traffic data question is the appropriateness of whether or not it is appropriate for this manager of a public asset, whether or not they should have exclusive rights or any rights at all in the data that individual users are giving to them every time they use that asset. There are any number of arguments to be made that the data actually belongs to the users and that right shouldn't accrue to the registry. So it's not even there's a question of data versus service, but I think taking one step back and to examine whether or not it's even appropriate for any rights to be given to the registry operator in this data.
I think that's exactly the point we want to make as well.
So that is data, not services. And the data you're talking about is the data that the registry has got through their role as the registry, is that right? So it's not just data on how many staff they have or something. It's
yes.
Does that capture the situation in SiteFinder?
Well, that's captured by a separate policy, Marilyn, which is the whatever the policy is called. But we actually have a policy on introducing new services, and it has to go through a process which covers SiteFinder.
Okay, I think we can live with that change.
Excuse me, Bruce. Bruce, this is Tony Harris.
Yep.
I have to leave the call. I leave my proxy to Tony Holmes and then Greg Ruth. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tony. So I'll send to the list a revised version of five, which I think captures that a little bit more clearly.
And I've sent some language on around 3A, Bruce, as well. I mentioned that I wanted to go back to that. We don't have to do it this second. It's on the list.
Yeah, look, I'll try and sort of I'll look at it and I think if Olaf could help draft fresh terms of reference based on all these discussions, that would help me greatly. And then we can and then if we can get that out, is that possible to get kind of a fresh version out within sort of 24 hours or so, Olaf?
Hi, it's Maria here. We've been trying to capture.
I was on mute, but I guess. Now, well, Of course, we can get something out. And I would say that, all right, if you have... the question is more about what to do with within brackets kind of stuff.
Just the things that we basically...
Or with brackets?
No, without brackets. Basically a version that's got the bits that there seem to be agreement on this call.
If it's got square brackets, it's not agreed, so it don't include it. I think besides what you've captured on this call, you've probably got two or three councillors are going to submit things to the list within 12 hours, shall we say, to help clarify your wording there. Hopefully that will allow you within 24 to put together a fabulous set of tentatives.
Yeah.
That would be...
I would say that if I can't do it in 24 because I'm going to spend Friday night doing this kind of stuff.
Surely not enjoying it.
No, I won't. quite clearly. I mean, I've got a budget call tomorrow night to start with. So either we will try to do it before then, or it will be sometime during the weekend.
Okay, so by Monday.
Yeah, I mean, live with this guy.
Monday's fine. Just let me get a couple
on there. So, Bruce, this is June. Are we done with Section 6? Hello?
So the last agenda item on this call was partly related to all this as to whether they have discussions in Washington. I don't think we're kind of ready other than maybe to talk about terms of reference, but we just really need to schedule another call, I think, to finalize this.
So we're meeting in Washington on Friday and Saturday of next week. Can we set aside 2 hours on Friday late afternoon dedicated to this, maybe 3 to 5 East Coast time specific to this topic?
Well, that would probably not be a good time for Europe, I imagine.
3 to 5 is going to be...
midnight to 2 a.m.
But we'll be on
the East Coast.
9 o'clock.
We'll be in Washington.
Right, 9 you're East Coast. Okay, yes. That'll do it. That's fine. I heard reference to West Coast, so sorry.
On the Friday evening, you're going to be zigging.
Oh. Look, I'll have a look at the times. I'll have a look at the agenda on there. I'll put it at the end of that day in terms of finalising this, because if I put it before dinner, that might be a... an incentive for people to get it done.
Yeah, Bruce, I'd like to say something. I'm for pushing the discussion of this issue forward, but I also recognize that the PDP on whether and how to create new GTLDs is part of the MOU. So some of us see a good portion of our whole career is hanging on the success and timeliness of getting this PDP done. And I saw your agenda, and I generally agree with it. But I also think that given the discussion we had here today is a fraction of the discussion. You know, it's a subset of the discussion that needs to be had regarding the formation of new GTLDs. And I agree with your agenda, but I think it's ambitious, and I can't imagine not being able to use every moment of the time we have there together. 2 hours represents, you know, I'm not going to be able to do the arithmetic in my head very fast, but it represents over 10% and probably 15% of the total time we were going to do it.
Just to clarify that, I'll add this 2 hours in addition to that existing agenda.
And Bruce, I'd like to speak on this topic. I'm very familiar with what the MOU says. The MOU says we have to have a policy. We're working on it. But we have to work this topic in parallel. And I think the vote of the council makes that very clear.
Yeah, so what I'm proposing is, as the current agenda, and I just need to have a look at time zones and things, but you know, it's either going to be done at sort of 6 o'clock on the Friday night, or it's going to be done at 6 o'clock in the morning
on Saturday morning so you guys can feel my pain at getting up at 6. But we will.
But Bruce, I will just make a procedural point. This is 7 days before. That means Glenn needs to post now that that segment will be a council meeting. Right?
Yeah, so we look, let me have a look at the time. I'll have a look at, so I'll either make it Saturday night or just check at what time 6 o'clock works out for the other time zones, provided it's not too extreme and given I guess we'll have a fair number of people on site anyway.
But we have to notice it's a council meeting so that we can make decisions or not make decisions. And we have to notice it 7 days.
Yes, that's right, Marilyn. So I will issue an agenda after this call when I get a second to have some food.
And Bruce,
I'll comply with that 7-day requirement.
Bruce, this is June.
Yep.
Yeah, I have two key questions. I was not very clear on that. In the first page of the photograph of the first page, are we going back to original wording, or just we decided to go with Madeline's edit?
We're going with nothing to do with. We're going with what the council has added on this call. So what we'll do is we'll post a new version or a new draft as the reference, which has been informed by the council on this call, and then we will be seeking to vote on that during that meeting in a week's time.
So who will be exactly wording that on behalf of council?
Sorry, June, say that again.
Yeah, who will be wording that that photograph on behalf of council?
The next draft, that will be done by staff based on the submissions that have been made during this call, and also whoever wants to, Ross has basically posted, I'm going to post a slightly reworded version of 5. If you wish to submit changes from the registry constituency, please do so. We've got to keep moving it forward.
Yeah. Bruce is absolutely fine in terms of all the concerns that I've raised. There will be voices present in Washington who will be capable of weaving whatever needs to be weaved into whatever gets woven in the intervening week.
Okay. And one more thing I'd like to be clear on that is, are you giving the GTLD constituency to have more time to bet on those issues? Because this edit just came to surface 2 hours prior to the scheduled call today, so we didn't have enough participation from our constituency members to go over these issues. So we definitely want to have more time.
Yeah, so you have a week. You have 7 days.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. So are we clear on that?
Yep.
Bruce, are you approving the call? If not, I'm going to give
you a call. Yes, I would certainly like to. Okay, so if there's nothing else, I'll end the call at this point.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.